kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Cole's going to be here a little later on with the Party Cast crew. But first up, we got Jacob Garner. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, because I'll probably get a couple words in edgewise now that Cole's not here.
Yeah, you get to... This is like Jacob time now.
I know. It's my time to shine. I'm sure I'll screw it up.
You will.
Definitely. I always do.
Yeah.
It's pretty much guaranteed. I mean, if I'm not screwing up a tweet by accidentally tagging a celebrity, then, you know, constantly tagging Melissa Etheridge instead of, you know, Cole.
Shout out to actor Jesse Hyman, who stumbled upon our podcast somehow and followed us and has offered his services to join us. Maybe after this whole episode 600 kerfuffle, we'll sit down and see when he's free and get him on here.
Who?
Jesse Hyman.
He's
like a character actor. Probably best known is, remember the one, I believe it was GoDaddy commercial of Bar Raffaelli making out with the nerd? Commercial from years back?
Apparently years and years back. Making out with a nerd in a GoDaddy commercial.
Yeah.
Wait, is he like the... He's not like the guy who's always in the background, like, as nerd types, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Like, dude, he's been in a ton of stuff.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. How did he find our podcast?
Because of Drake Hollow's delay and Cole being sad about it.
Oh, wow. Crazy.
Found a tweet about us going live on Twitch.
Uh-huh.
And liked it, and I saw it, and I was like, how the hell did you find us? He's like, I found you because of Drake Hollow. Like, but it's cool that you do a podcast. And I'm like, well, you should check us out. He's like, I'd love to be on the show sometime if you ever free. And I'm like, well, listen to an episode first so you know what the fuck you're getting into. I haven't heard from him since. I wonder if he actually listened.
Oh, no.
Or if he's just waiting for me to message and be like, hey, for real, do you want to come on?
Yeah, no, that's
so cool. Tag him on this episode.
You would have to give me his Twitter handle.
Well, we follow him, so just check our follows.
I don't know if TweetDeck does that.
I don't know either.
Yeah, we'll figure it does.
I don't know.
No, maybe. I mean, if I anything,
can
I
can search
just,
him. How hard is that? Then again, new Twitter is awful. So
like, it's been awful, but I mean, like, also, you know, like. You know, I can't really look him up right now because I got one hand on my phone, one hand scratching myself, you know.
Yeah.
It's a hard knock life.
Yeah. Remember saying that you're going to ruin it?
All right. What time are we at?
We're just about 4 minutes into the show, so it only took you
it's not a new record. That's definitely not a record. That's
not
disappointing,
at all.
Joe. I'm getting old.
A lot of people think our last episode was a record, being under an hour, but did you know that there are actually a couple of episodes that are shorter?
I was going to say, I know some of the early ones clock in under an hour.
Yeah, a couple of the single-digit days, including episode 1, which is a whopping 48 minutes.
Ooh.
So if you want to go back and listen to us when we were...
No,
I know. I wouldn't go back either.
If anything, I mean, we could at least figure out when the heck I show up on the show. Because I don't think I'm on the first few episodes.
I don't know when you show up.
I think it's still in the single, it was still in the single digits, like, you know, as guest contributor, you know, as you guys discuss the news, and I'm like, oh, yeah? Oh. What's that?
Yeah, what was it? The video game store you were hanging out with us?
Yeah, there was a couple of that in Bogue Plays, whatever, I remember him, the only one I remember him doing is Man vs. Wild.
That's probably the only really important one he did.
I was going to, well, I know Bug I was there for Wild. Another one, but I don't remember what it was.
Oh, God. Deadfall Adventures, I think.
Oh, I don't know.
Because I know he did that game as well.
I mean, I know it was just a lot of him not doing well.
Oh, man, we can't all be good at games. Present company included.
Whatever. You know what? We'll just hook you up to a virtual reality headset and somehow make you have to watch me play My Horse and Me Too.
Oh, jeez. I shit you not, as a gag, I picked up my Unicorn Princess for fucking Xbox One.
How? Isn't that $40?
No, it was only 20. That's why I picked it up, because when? GameStop had it for 20.
Oh, physical copy.
Yeah.
And how is it?
I haven't played it yet. I probably never will. I figure that's an April 20th game. So it's in the distance, but think of how good it'll look on a Series X.
Meanwhile, like, you know, my oldest son would be like, my unicorn? What? As a game? Yes. gosh. I've been playing Lego City Undercover with him lately.
Ooh, that's a good one.
It is. Co-op's not great.
No.
And granted, he's six, so he's mostly running around the city, like, you know, grabbing whatever vehicles. And it's kind of weird because, like, he narrates what he's doing as if there's, like, this big overarching story that involves him having to grab as many vehicles as he can while I pretty much do all of the mission work. And then he gets frustrated that he's not able to do some of the stuff, and I'm just like, dude, this is, come on, you gotta practice this stuff. I can't just like get you through everything.
Get your shit together.
And then I get him through everything. But
you cave.
We're like four chapters in.
So, nice.
Yeah. I wish they would make a sequel. He's a big fan of the the cop character. Because there was like some books that got written and like he took them out of his elementary school library.
Oh, is it Chase something?
Chase McCain.
Chase McCain. Yeah.
He's a big fan of him for some reason. So, and of course, like, they haven't made any Chase McCain sets for like 5 years.
No. So, did you see the set that they are making?
You mean the one that I posted to the Facebook page?
Yes, I'm just trying to strike up conversation, dickhead.
Oh. Well, here I am thinking that you don't ever pay attention to what I post, so, you know, whatever. Oh, God, wait, do you actually read what I post?
No, never.
Oh, okay, good. Thank God.
I try not to. If it shows up on my feed, I look at it. I don't go out of my way to see what you post.
Fantastic. So
it could be dick pics for all I know.
Not yet.
At least although you admit will. Not yet.
Although I probably will upload that Goro meme afterwards.
Oh, God. If it wasn't so bad, I would use it as the picture for the episode.
Why not?
Because I don't think any of the publishers would appreciate linking to their video and it says fucking Goro. Imagine him jerking off four dicks. Just think four at once.
I don't see the issue. And then I also wonder why I can't get any like actual real paying jobs as social media coordinators.
Yeah, you explain this to Motorsport Games.
Okay. I mean, if they fly me out there, I will gladly explain this meme to, like, you know, their board of directors.
Now, if anything, you're going to have to explain it through a cease and desist reply.
True.
That's the high quality shit that we run on this show. So aside from Lego City, what else are you playing? What's what has Jacob Garner been enjoying lately?
I'm still like whittling away at Glass Menagerie 2. Like
Masquerade.
The menu. Oh yeah. Yeah.
You Masquerade, love the game, you. But you don't know the name.
Yeah, well maybe if the menu wasn't so damn hard to navigate. I haven't actually listened to Cole's review of it. Did she complain about that too? Do you know?
Are you asking me to remember something?
Yes.
Oh, good luck, buddy.
Okay. And then also I've been playing Loco Cycle.
Why?
Because I picked it up for like $2. And, you know, I'm a fan of Twisted Pixel's work. And I was curious about it because, like, this was like that was like the last Xbox game that they ever released because they pretty much just done nothing but VR work for Steam.
I'm kind of sad to see what's become of Twisted Pixel.
I mean, I haven't played any of their VR stuff, and maybe it's what's working for them.
Maybe,
but I mean, at the same time, it's just like look, it's a weird game. Like, first off, the controls aren't that great. And the game doesn't really explain what it wants you to do. But it has a lot of ideas and it's kind of fun, but also kind of bad. But like, it definitely has like the Twisted Pixel, like mark to it of like just that offbeat weirdness.
Yeah.
To it. But at the same time, the idea of a guy being dragged behind a motorcycle, like from Central America all the way up to like Ohio, I don't know. I just thought in a post Matthew Shepard world, like dragging somebody from a car for like an entire game seems like a tad tone deaf. Mm. Like, you know, I'm sure it's like a, you know, it's a weird, like Looney Tunes ish kind of idea, but it's one of those things where I'm just like, this was like, I could understand it for even like the first level, but like, just have the guy hop on the motorbike and then like the motorcycle decides to chuck him at vehicles and stuff like that. I could get that, but like to have him dragging the whole entire time, that's like,
did you beat the game?
Not yet. I'm on like, I think in chapter 2, level 3, I think.
Well, then you don't know if it's the whole game.
I'm pretty sure it's the whole game.
That'd be hilarious if like the next chapter or something happens and he's on the bike for the rest of the game, and you're just an asshole on the podcast, although you're probably right.
I mean, I already figured I was an asshole on the podcast. So,
yeah, true.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, you know, next time I'm on, we could have Loco Cycle update. Because, you know, we need more features that nobody will want to listen to.
If we get an email at the smlpodcast@gmail.com demanding an update on Loco Cycle, we'll give you a fucking update on Loco Cycle.
Or maybe I'll just force my way to talking about it next time. You're like, do I really want to waste 30 seconds on this podcast that generally goes for an hour and a half at minimum?
Yeah, and we still have a party cast to go later, so we should probably get to the game you're here to talk about, huh?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we could talk more about Loco Cycle.
Is there more to talk about with Loco Cycle?
Not really.
All right, then. First game to talk about tonight is called NASCAR Heat 5, developed by 704 Games Company, published by Motorsport Games, released July 10th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $49.99. Gold Edition released July 7th for $69.99 and includes the NASCAR Heat 5 Season Pass and a whole bunch of goddamn Tony Stewart content, like a spotter voice, career offer, and paint schemes. I have a long and storied history with Tony Stewart on this show because he reminds me of my ex-stepdad. Oh. And I just want to punch him in the... NASCAR Heat 5, the official video game of the world's most popular stock car racing series, puts you behind the wheel of these incredible racing machines and challenges you to become the 2020 NASCAR Cup Series champion. Jacob, how is your series going?
Generally, it's okay. I mean, like right now, I'm still really excelling on the dirt track racing. However, the folks in NASCAR truck don't really seem to like me.
Why? Are you like running them off the road?
Well, see, I mean, like, it's almost kind of expected in the mud ones, but, like, once you get up to, like, the actual things that have NASCAR written on them, everyone's just like, you ran into me, you traded paint, like, and they get, like, super upset, like, when I place first and, you know, that guy, like, I made a guy spin out after, like, the fourth lap and stuff like that. And I'm just like, yeah, well, maybe you suck. Maybe you should get good. like, you know, all these professional drivers, like, what do they know? You know?
Bitches, all of them.
Then I have to, like, send tweets where I'm apologizing to them. And then, you know, most of them are okay with me. Although one guy, I think it was like my first win in NASCAR truck. And he was just like, oh, why'd you run into me? Because I called my guy Speed Racer, because of course I did. He's like, why'd you run into me, Speed Racer? You, maybe you're not good enough for this level of racing. And he's the only one I insulted back. And so now he's mad. And he's nice. My rival.
I did the same thing. Every year. I find someone to piss off.
Well, I didn't even intentionally like try to find somebody to do it. It's just everyone was just like, hey, man, that was kind of uncool. And I'm like, okay, I apologize. And he's just like, maybe you're not on the level for this. And it's just like, well, maybe you can suck my junk. So... So that's how my career's going so far.
God damn it.
Yeah. No, like I'm really enjoying this game. Like, honestly, you know, I mean, you tend to hand me racing games partially because, you know, I'm terrible at
games, so I give games.
I know, but I'm also terrible at them too.
I mean, I figure you've got to get good eventually, and the NASCAR games are usually fairly forgiving to newcomers.
Yeah, which I do appreciate for this game. But anywho, where should I begin on this?
I thought visually it was okay. A really solid looking game. Yeah. Right. I played on the X. You played on an S or an X?
S.
And your thoughts?
Oh, I thought it looked beautiful. I mean, like, there was a couple of tracks that I've been on where, like, the clouds looked a little iffy. But that was the worst, you know, of it, you know. It's just like, if you're really paying attention to the clouds, then, you're probably not actually racing. So anywho, but yeah, like visually it looks beautiful. Like, and I like, honestly, it's a joy to play, especially going around the dirt tracks, cause that allows you to drift more,
yeah. Which,
you know, asphalt doesn't let you do as much. So it's not as fun. Or also people don't appreciate that kind of driving.
It's an art.
It is, and they don't appreciate it. Uncultured swines. Anyway.
I do want to say, I don't know if this is an issue solely with the X version, but even on the performance mode where it's supposed to prioritize frame rate over visuals, I would get some framiness and frame skips, and I don't know if... that's something that needs to be patched. Otherwise, it was a fairly smooth looking game and it was beautiful to look at. It was, you know, great looking for a racing game. It felt like the mud was getting thrown in my face and it was fun crashing into other cars and sending their asses into the wall.
Yeah. I mean, like, I wasn't ever like intentionally doing that, but you know, if there was hole open.
If I saw Tony Stewart, seriously, boom, target right at him. T-boned him. Like, my yearly tradition in these races is to do a 100% length race, and I did one this year, and every single time I would come upon Tony Stewart, whether I was passing him because I have it on easy and I'm a bitch and I play on easy, and I would slam into the wall or T-bone him or spin him out or something. It's satisfying. He has yet to actually get pissed off at me, and I don't know what I have to do to make him hate me.
That's weird.
I know.
Yeah, because, like, I had one guy who, like, I kind of made him, like, completely spin out, and he was, like, I think we were, like, 15th and 16th. Like, he was right next to me. I made him spin out. And he finished, like, next to last. So, I mean, like, I kind of get why he was like, maybe you're not ready for NASCAR truck. But whatever, you know. Yeah,
suck it up, buttercup.
Get good, scrub.
Yeah, seriously. Handling?
It handles great. I mean, my only kind of issue is that, like, I mean, I had to go look up what the controls were. Because, you know, even on beginner, it still doesn't really tell you what they do. And I never actually used my brake for, like, the first, like, six or so races. you know, I just kind of drifted around corners. Because, I mean, like, you start off on the mud track, so it's like, whatever. But, yeah, it wasn't until I had to go on the asphalt that I actually, like, I should figure out what my brake is.
Yeah.
Which is what I figured it was. But, like, it never really seemed to do much, so I wasn't sure. I still actually can't figure out how to do a burnout. So, whatever.
What do you mean?
You know, when you win a race.
You hit the A button when you win.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah. A button takes you to burnout, and B button skips the burnout.
Oh.
Yeah. But you have to win, buddy. Maybe that's your issue.
Excuse me? Excuse me? Maybe you have to win? I believe I have 5 career wins right now. Thank you very much.
Hot diggity, son.
Yeah. No, I like, when I'm on a dirt track, I fucking own that shit. Like, I was surprisingly pleased with this game. You know, it definitely handles, you know, I had a much more enjoyable time with this than I did with F1 2018.
I should have got you F1 2020.
Oh, did we get it offered?
I didn't request it.
Oh, damn it, Joe.
Do you want it?
I mean, I think it's already out, though.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I'll still review it. Should we really be talking about the competition's games during this?
Probably not. Okay. Although, I personally would go with NASCAR Heat over an F1 game. I'm more of a fan of the arcade style of racing that NASCAR Heat brings to the game. You keep talking about the career mode. When you get further into the career than you have gotten, you have the option to, like, create a team or sign up for another team and take someone else's spot.
Or you can add on as, like, a third member, because that's what I did. Because I didn't want to replace somebody, because I'm actually on a team, and both of them perform well. And I was just like, I don't feel like replacing anybody. You know, why don't I just enhance the team? And, you know, that's what I'm doing.
Sweet.
Yeah. Like, because I'm getting all these, like, career wins, we're running shit. So
I just replaced someone. I saw who gave the most money per race, and I'm like, I'm joining your team. Who looks the dorkiest? GTFO Car 69 is here to take over.
Fantastic.
Yeah, buddy. I feel like I'm both at once the target audience for the game and at the same time not at all the target audience for this game.
That's a fair assumption. although one thing I didn't like about the career mode is that it's just like it forces you to do all the hot seat races. Like, you can't say no to them, because it's just like, oh, well, you can either race now or you can race later. Oh, I guess later or now. I don't know. And it's just like, because one
it's
of
the
them
intro
I was
to
just
the
like,
game, son. You gotta get the hang of the ropes and get used up, to Joe. Controls and get into just, things.
Just be quiet. Anyway, because there was one hot seat thing that I'm just like, I am not going to meet the qualifications for this. I don't know why you're expecting me to do this. Because it was one where you have to place in the top 3 at Pocono Downs. And I'm just like, excuse me? Like, I am not going to survive this. And, like, I think I placed, like, 9th in the race. And they're like, oh, good job. Here's your $30 for racing. Like, thank God we didn't have to pay out $10,000 to you. Like, thanks, guy. I don't know. My only other complaint is that multiplayer, I didn't get to do it because it kept saying, like, I wasn't able to join lobbies because of something in my settings for my profile. But then it wouldn't do anything to correct it so I could enter in. And it's just like, I don't know what I had to change for it. So, yeah. So I never actually got to play multiplayer because everyone also wanted, because I think it's like 40 cars can enter in one multiplayer game. I think that's what it is. Yeah. And so, like, when I kept trying to do it, like, the lobbies are just full. Sorry, they're not full. but they're full of games that are like, it's all these guys waiting to fill it up with 40 people. And I'm just like, you have 12. Isn't that enough? Is that enough? No, no, we're still going to wait. Okay.
I wonder what the minimum is.
I don't. Well, that's the thing. Like, it's probably like you probably just make it two, but all these people like want huge races with everyone else, and I don't think they're finding it. So
yeah, I think they should matchmake, and if nothing else, throw in some AI bots to fill the slots. And
well, that's probably what you do. Like let's say like the guy only got 12 people. Like, I mean, I'm sure it fills up the other, you know, what would that be, 28? Like, I'm sure it's like 28 AI racers then, but you have to hit go to start up the game.
Mm.
So.
And you got to wait for the party lead to be like, okay, good enough.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Although, now that you, like, going back to the whole Tony Stewart thing, that actually now makes a ton of sense why he always is, like, second place on the pole position. Like, I didn't realize that like, you know, the gold edition was all about him.
Yeah,
so.
Fucking Tony Stewart. Just, he even looks like my ex-stepdad. I just want to punch him in the throat every time.
Tony Stewart, if you're
face on camera.
Tony Stewart, if you're listening, I apologize.
I ram him off the road so hard.
Is this about to get into sexual territory?
So, $49.99 on NASCAR Heat 5. What are your thoughts?
Oh, totally worth it. Like, honestly, I'm surprised it's not 60.
Well, they do have the gold edition for 70.
Well, right. But, I mean, I was expecting it to be like a $60 game. No. You know, $50 is even better.
Yeah, so. And the season pass, if you jump on the gold edition, it's actually a good deal because the season pass is normally $30. So you're saving $10 by getting the gold edition.
Yikes.
Plus, I believe the gold edition is the only way to get the Tony Stewart stuff.
If you need it.
Yeah, which, you know.
Right. I was a little surprised like you didn't get the pre-order bonus or whatever it was, but it doesn't seem like there's a way to get it either.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
Hey, you take what you could get.
It's
anyway, we have a party cast we have to get to, so we're going to let you get going. The kids are going to get put to bed, and the adults are going to go play now. So do you have any final words before we let you go?
I'm looking forward to updating everybody on my adventures with Loco Cycle.
All right, moving on. We've got our party cast going on. Cole's here. Purnell's here. Chris is here. Tim Ekibis is here. How's everybody doing tonight?
Man, you are already exhausted with us.
I'm exhausted with Jacob. I didn't get any fanfare this week. I'm so disappointed. Damn.
It's because you skipped out on the Jacob thing to watch a movie, which was probably the better thing to do.
It really was. We watched Hamilton outside while the girls were in the swimming pool.
How many times have you watched that so far?
8. And that doesn't include the times we've listened to the album without watching the show.
Wow.
We're very... even the kids are, like, overwhelmingly requesting Hamilton. Like, constantly. So, like, if I wish I had a dime for every time number 3 has just run through the house and gone, I'm a general, wee! And it's hilarious. And also, I'm getting really close to being tired of it.
We're right there. We're coming up on the precipice.
There is a cusp, and I have hit it.
Oh my god.
She'll do it tomorrow and I'll think it's cute, but then like the third time I'm like, okay, I get it, you're a general.
You're a goddamn general. Okay.
Yes, child,
And we move on.
Just wee your ass out to the trampoline. God. Goodness.
So how is everybody? How was everyone's weekend?
Oh my god, that feels like forever ago. I had a very long day yesterday at work, so...
Why? What happened?
Yeah.
It was just a long hours?
Day. I had to cover a board meeting where we were giving the district's presentation on our plan to reopen schools for the fall.
Oh, so it was 52 hours.
It was a late night. Then an early morning, so...
Did you vomit?
Yeah, boy.
Did you anxiety puke?
No, I did not.
Oh, I feel so let down.
Sorry.
You get disappointed over weird things.
I can't be the only person that anxiety.
Sorry to let you down? Question mark?
I don't think I've ever quite heard of an anxiety puke as being declared as such.
Here we are.
I've said it before, so anyway, it's hard to, like, the two people that listen, I'm sorry, but when I first started recording the podcast, I kept a puke bucket beside me because I would get anxiety and I'd puke before the show.
But you refer to them as anxiety pukes instead of just, I puked, because I've heard you tell that story before.
Because it's different than normal puke.
Is it the consistency? Is it the, what makes it different? It's all bile in the end.
No,
I'm not quite feeling the difference.
There's the show title for the week. It's all bile in the end.
The anxiety puke is not as forceful as, like, I'm sick, my body needs to evacuate the dance floor kind of puke.
It has a different bouquet.
Yeah, it's just like, it's like that. My body forces it and just is like, good luck.
A different bouquet. There's like your problem reading flowers.
I have been told that I'm pretty flowers much a rabbit in my consumption. So
they are to be admired, not consumed.
Flowers are friends, not food.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's not true. In redneck land, I do have rose tea. And also in redneck land, we make dandelion tea and dandelion jelly. And we eat dandelion greens with vinegar and pork fat. So, I mean, flowers
are food. We eat dandelions.
And yet you're the one who's puking shit on a podcast, so I don't know that you're making your case that effectively.
I'm not saying I've eaten it recently. I've broke some bad poor people habits the last 2 years. It's been a conscious effort.
Dandelions, some pebbles.
Man, I've told this story on the show before too, but my mom used to go and like pick poke stalks, and poke is fucking poisonous.
Oh, trust me.
You have to prepare it a certain way or it will kill you.
But did she feed it to you guys?
Yes, we all ate it as kids. She would take that shit and fry it up and we'd be like, fuck yeah, it's poke stalks.
See, I'm genuinely happy in the sense that, like, both my parents grew up pretty damn poor. And while we didn't grow up rich by any means, they grew up poor to the point where they were like, we don't have a lot of money, but we're not going to feed you what we had to eat. So hot dogs and baked beans was a regular thing in our house. Same with hamburger helper, cheap meals you could just throw together, and spaghetti, of course. And I used to complain about that, and then I learned what my parents used to eat. I was like, well, what do you know? Spaghetti again. Let's eat. Let's go, go, go.
What's wrong with spaghetti?
It got old. It's not that it tastes bad. It's a boring dish when it's a constantly made thing. It's especially when it's not even like well seasoned. It's literally just here's some sauce, here's some noodles, and you might luck out and get some grated cheese. But generally, no. You're just eating sauce and noodles.
If you had sauce, you were doing all right. We grew up with naked noodles.
We've done that a few times. Did you ever do sugar water?
Yeah, we did sugar water.
Oh, sugar water. And, of course, peanut butter and honey sandwiches, the honey being from the government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We've been dead. This is a show of people who grew up broke.
I did not grow up that broke, apparently.
We got our honey from the grocery store. Guys.
Tim has discovered that he was middle class. Nope.
We got our honey from the grocery store.
Sorry, guys. We always had sauce on our spaghetti.
Sometimes they put pepper in it, too.
My mom's favorite snack
was buttermilk and cornbread. She'd take the cornbread and crumble it up in the buttermilk and eat it with a spoon.
Mm.
See, I got down with
my
that.
Family. The way we used to get honey is we'd put bees in our mouths.
I think that feels more like by the time you get the honey, you'd be probably, dead. But
You build up an immunity.
You build up an immunity to a high built in your stomach.
Like, you get your protein, you get your honey, everybody wins, except the bees.
who are
an endangered species.
That's the real reason bees are going extinct right there.
Now they passed the hive. Somehow, magic. Wizard did it. Shit. But yeah, we used to get some stuff like that. And I remember, of course, the cereal dialogue where you go to this grocery store, it's time to get some cereal, and we'd see Lucky Charms and Tony the Tiger Frosted Flakes. Like, I want that. Come on, Dad. All the kids are talking. This is the good stuff. It's a commercial on TV. He's like, nope. You got your marshmallow stars right here. Took it right up. You know, sugar. She was a sugar flakes or something. I can't remember.
King Frosted Flakes.
King Vitamin, yeah.
Well, I will say this, though. Yeah, we did get King Vitamin, though. King Vitamin was awesome.
That's because you can get King Vitamin on Wick.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. Croco Crunch was better than Captain Crunch, and I'll die saying that. Crunch was way better than Captain Crunch, and the kids could laugh all they want. I was like, you don't know what you're missing. Crunchitize that shit. You don't know nothing.
The one thing in common with all of the generic Captain Crunches is that, man, you got to build up calluses in your roof of your mouth to handle those things.
Yeah, that's why I never partook.
Those are working people cereals.
But the trade-off is that you didn't worry about the SOG effect for a long time. You could actually take your time eating it. You could actually discuss your morning.
Like, I could just munch on this for breakfast and then keep it in the milk for lunch.
Hey, if that's what it takes, I mean... And the other time, you get, like, freaking, again, like, Frosted Flakes, you're eating that mess, you have, like, 2 minutes in your drink, you were literally eating, like, the flakes soup. Become with the milk. It's disgusting.
Yeah, Frosted Flakes nowadays are terrible.
They got worse.
Hadn't had them in a while.
They're tiny, too.
But like, now they're honey.
No big deal.
And they combine them with Fruit Loops because somebody asked for that shit.
Wait, what?
You can buy them in the same mixed up, they call them, like, you remember how I told you about the mixed up potato chips where they have like two flavors in one bag? Well, apparently Kellogg's got wind of that shit too, and now they got mixed up cereals, and you can get a box of cereal that has Fruit Loops and Frosted Flakes in one bag. Who the fuck wanted that? What's wrong with them?
Because next thing you know, they're going to have Mario and Zelda cereal.
Spoilers, they were the same cereal.
They were.
But we didn't care.
I think I got it, you know, my privileged childhood. I think we got exactly one box of that ever. It was like a treasure.
That's a bet. Yeah, it was a breakfast now.
Oh my god, it's true. Kellogg's mashups, Frosted Flakes and Fruit Loops.
It doesn't make a lick of damn sense. Like, I get, you know, you're low on cereal in the house, so you just combine the two because you want a bigger bowl. And I've done cereal mix-ups in the past. I've combined cereals. I've done Lucky Charms with Fruit Loops. But that at least makes some modicum of sense. Fruit Loops and Frosted Flakes. You got a different SOG factor here. You got a different taste factor here. Nothing makes sense there. Half your cereal's soggy, half your cereal's crunchy. No. It's terrible. It's a terrible idea, and they should be ashamed of themselves for even producing the product. Just making
strong words.
I haven't eaten Frosted Flakes since Thurl Ravenscroft died.
There is a name I have not heard in a very long time.
I think about him every day.
Why? Because of his name?
Because of that. Because he's Tony the Tiger. Because he sang the Grinch song. And because he's the goblins in the animated Hobbit film, which is like one of my favorite films in the world.
So did they replace Tony, or did they just loop the old voice?
No, they replaced him. I heard a new voice. It's not as good.
But yeah, Thurl Ravenscroft was a dude with a mustache and had the opposite of my voice.
Like Frosted Flakes, they're good.
They're great.
They're adequate. How many times do we have to tell you? They're great. They're great. And you gotta go deep on the E. They're grand.
They're great.
Reasonably acceptable.
They're great, but they're not even great. All right?
They're not even great.
Just stop.
What if they were, though?
If you were Mr. Kellogg's grandson, you wouldn't even have this damn joke. Get the hell out of here. They're great. Oh, my God. See, now I want to see this in effect. I want to see this poor bastard trying to get that one line right and failing constantly. I just want to see it. And then, of course, we got, you know, was it Toucan Sam recently had a redo, and people weren't happy about that. Like,
oh, the new Toucan Sam is awful.
He looks like a Gendy Tartakovsky piece or something. I don't know what they were doing with that. It's like, I like Gendy Tartakovsky, but I don't want that in my Toucan Sam. It doesn't make sense.
You guys have strong opinions on this.
We have to, man.
We tend to go off on cereal.
yes, we do. This is the real stuff right here. I can't affect U.S. politics, but my cereal mascot, you damn right I'm going to talk about that shit.
Tim, have you seen the new Toucan Sam?
No.
It's more like Toucan't.
Toucan't Sam. Toucan's Sam.
If you're looking at the stream, it is on stream right now. It is pretty awful. It is not a good redesign at all.
It looks like a Cuphead boss.
They took the former Quiz mascot and was like, you know what? We got to resurrect that guy. But we can't bring back the cereal, so let's just turn Toucan Sam into the Quix guy.
How is it exactly that the artist thinks that birds' beaks work, both in color and shape?
Magic.
Yeah. This is bugging me so bad. Please take it off the screen before I cry.
It hurts, doesn't it? There are people who are like, you know, what does it matter? I'm like, it just... Don't get me wrong, I'm not losing sleep over this jerk or anything, but it's
I'm gonna.
Oh,
my cat just
like, I'm gonna. Gotta wake up. I had the dream again. The dream, yeah. Toucan Sam started melting into a pile of acid, and then from the depths came this abomination. I don't know what to do with myself. I couldn't even eat. I started anxiety puking all over the place.
Bring it into a circle, huh?
Dare I say?
Yeah, we should talk about video games. We have a lot to talk about this week. Is everyone ready to get into the reviews?
I'm ready to review 2K Sam's Journey.
Wonderful, because the first game to talk about is called CrossCode, developed by Radical Fish Games, published by Deck 13 Spotlight, released July 9th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $19.99. A retro-inspired 2D action RPG set in the distant future, CrossCode combines 16-bit SNES-style graphics with butter-smooth physics, a fast-paced combat system, and engaging puzzle mechanics served with a gripping sci-fi story. Tim, tell us about CrossCode.
I refuse. Yes, okay, CrossCode. Nah, I'm good. Let's talk about this cereal crap again. No, hey, CrossCode. Yay. And a lot of us have actually played this game.
Find the Toucan Sam cameo?
God damn it, Pernell.
Okay. No, tell me more.
I can't. It's a secret.
Why? Is he still embargoed?
He's embargoed.
Till 9 a.m.
Toucan Sam is embargoed.
Tomorrow.
All right, yeah, so CrossCode. Definite. You take a glance at this game, you're like, okay, that looks like some 16-bit looking at graphical stuff going on there. But the game takes place in a fictional MMO, sort of. Primarily, you are playing a game within a game, technically speaking, where, you know, you awaken as Leah, a spheromancer, that's one of the classes in said game, who has lost her memory. Stop me if you've heard that one before.
In an RPG?
Yeah, I know, right?
Couldn't believe it. Wait,
how was the village of her birth?
Unknown.
In flames, unknown. Probably.
Well, you know, they mentioned, because you're, you know, the avatar of a person in the real world, which they allude to at the beginning of the game. And then, you know, as things unfold, you kind of find out more about your character's situation, I guess I'll say. But that's kind of like the setup. It's like, okay, you're this character in this RPG world, and you know, the people that are monitoring you, like your backup, are kind of like, okay, well, I guess you're going to play this RPG while we figure the rest of this out. Maybe it'll help you retrieve your memories. So yeah, you set out, and the game takes place from an overhead perspective. You can dash, you can melee things, you can throw balls. You have a, you know, ranged attack, which you can aim up. And if you just start shooting, your aim is really shit. So you have to aim for a second to hone in on something. Once you get into the game, like past like kind of the initial like prelude story stuff, past the initial tutorial, like, yeah, it drops you in to a city where you start picking up quests. You quickly make a friend in the game who is a real person. It's just that this weird meta layer where it's like, you know, everyone is playing a game, like they will literally refer to like, oh, they haven't, you know, patched in such and such yet, or they just added this or whatever. They're like literally referring to the game itself and what you are doing in it. But you're, you know, the characters you meet, like they are real people and they have real stories and real world problems. Like the first character you pick up, well, friend person, you meet after you play a couple of sessions with them. Like she'll be like, oh man, we stayed up way too late last night and I missed this meeting that I didn't know was happening for my study group. things you can relate to as a person. But yeah, you go into the world, you start picking up quests, and then you go out and you start, you know, traversing the world. Kind of the basic plot of the game. The game you're playing is called Cross Worlds, which mixes me up because that was the name of Robert V. Aldrich's first couple of books. So whenever I see that, I'm like, oh my God, they made a game within a game based on Robert's books.
That would be incredible.
That would be incredible. Not the case here, but it just makes me think of it. Shoot. Yeah. The plot of Cross World, the game you're playing, is that your character is a seeker trying to uncover the secrets of the land. You have to go around. Your avatar has to master all four elements. I'm not making a reference. That's it. The game is making a reference, which I'm just repeating. So you go off on your first quest through this place called Autumn Hills. You get to the next town, and then you go into a dungeon. And suddenly this game goes from being like, oh, it's kind of like a 16-bit overhead adaptation of what an MMO might have looked like at the time, if that's where the internet was at, to being like very much a Zelda game. All of a sudden, where you do the dungeon solo, like with no one in your party, and suddenly the game becomes much more focused on puzzles, and you'll puzzle your way through a dungeon through different rooms, you'll pick up keys that open doors, and then you'll fight a mid-boss, and you'll get a new ability, namely one of the aforementioned elements. But yeah, that element will then apply to both your combat abilities and your puzzle-solving abilities. So the first thing you pick up is fire, and would you believe it, you can use it to light torches and melt ice and do fiery things with.
In an RPG?
Well, in a Zelda game, imagine. That you have to light torches with a fire ability. But but beyond just that, like it is immediately, you know, you can activate it in combat, and suddenly you're doing more damage. It unlocks an entirely new skill tree in your submenu. So like the game starts out and you're kind of just in the center of this giant diamond, and as a skill tree, you get points, you unlock stuff, and like, okay, that's cool. But then when you get one of these new elements, like it unlocks a whole branch of it, and suddenly you have like a ton more stuff to unlock, and it loads you up with all your it gives you points for each branch separately, which I appreciate. You're not like deciding whether to commit points to like this branch or that branch. It's just like each one gets 1 point when you level up, and that's great. So like, yeah, you get a new element, you get new abilities, and then you get a whole new skill tree to go through to help, you know, upgrade your character. When you have the elements activated, it gives you different combat abilities. Beyond like your basic melee and ranged attack, there's also charged attacks when you just hold down R2, which you can do while you're dashing or blocking or shooting or melee-ing, as it were. Yeah, and it's just like, the game is just like a I find it to be, I don't know about you fellows, I find it to be an absolute ton of fun to play.
Like I find it incredibly charming.
It is very charming. It is...
Hi, Leia. Hi.
Oh, yeah. Your character's voice box is broken. So she has limited speech abilities. But, yeah, like
that's a great take on the silent protagonist.
It is. So she gradually gets more words written into her as you go through the game. So you do get more than just saying, like, hi and bye and Leia.
I'm Daisy.
Hi, I'm Daisy.
Oh, my
God. But yeah, the combat feels really good and fun. Like, it does have a some buttery smooth physics, as the copy said. Like, just controlling your character feels really good. Fighting enemies feels really good. As you're going around on the kind of like the, in one of the overworld areas, not a dungeon, like it does a good job of mixing up the enemy mobs. Like enemies themselves all have like different patterns and attacks. Depending on the area, there's not like, I don't know. I wasn't getting like, oh, here's this new area and just kind of each enemy has its own palette swap. It feels like all the enemies were like really thought through, in what they wanted them to do and how they wanted them act. How they wanted them to act and how they wanted them to fit in to the game and in different configurations as they come to attack you. The puzzles are really clever and rewarding to figure out. Some are tough, but
I was thinking, like, generally, I like when, like, puzzles are, like, a little bit on the challenging side.
Yeah. Like, they ramp things up. Like, each dungeon has kind of, like, new mechanics that it's going to center itself around. And it does a good job, I think, of, like, introducing them to you, like, gradually. And then you'll get, halfway through, you get the new tool, your new element. And then that applies to the back half of the dungeon more so. And, yeah, they do a good job with that stuff as well. There is a lot. There is just like secrets everywhere in this game. Like literally every screen, like when you're walking around in the overworld, like you'll see chests up on cliffs.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool platforming available in the game if you want to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's like one of the things that is one of the things where I would draw beef with the game. It's just tough to tell sometimes, like, what the elevation is. Like areas can have, like, multiple elevations going on, and sometimes it's really tough to tell, like, what is on the same level as your character. Not that it's, like, the end of the world if you, not that it's not the end of the world if you jump off a cliff, because it's not. like, you'll take a slight penalty to your health, and then you'll be fine. Your health regens between battles anyway, so it's fine. Don't worry about it. It's not bad.
Oh, definitely worth mentioning, since you brought up the regenerate part, there's the added element in the combat where you can string combat together.
Yes.
To get the grading. I won't ramble about it now that you're on it, but like, yeah, just like the you idea that combat. Oh, next is ramble I shall.
God, I shouldn't do that.
Something I like about the combat in this game is that, like Tim mentioned, after every skirmish, you get all your health back. So if you're just trying to progress through an area, you just want to blitz through some bomb enemies, the game will take care of that for you. You don't have to go worry about items and stuff. However, if you want to get the most bang for your buck, and by that I mean rare item drops and more experience points, what you want to do is actually chain your encounters together, because every time you attack an enemy, you will boost a gauge at the upper right corner of the screen that starts with rank D and goes all the way to rank S. And every time you hit a new enemy, the gauge will go up a little bit more until eventually, boom, you rank up to another letter. If you stop hitting enemies, the rank gauge will go down to the point where it'll eventually disappear and you have to start over. But the higher it goes, the more experience and rare item drops will pop. And I'm not sure, but you may even get a slight attack boost. I haven't determined that. But what I did like was that when you hit the rank S, stars will start falling from the sky and the music will change. Yeah. And it's like, now you're really in the zone. It's like, I got to keep fighting stuff. I can't stop because I want to lose that music.
But your health doesn't regenerate. And because if you want to, you can just stop at any well, not in the middle of combat, but if you finish off the enemies, you can hit a button and it will just end combat. It'll end your combo. It'll restore your health and you're fine. But if you want to keep pushing it, you just keep running around and smashing stuff.
Reward.
Yeah.
And the weird part is, like, while if you lose in that situation, the game doesn't, like, say, you know, say, game over, continue. But what it does do is it'll kick you back to the last screen entered. And the other thing I didn't quite determine was whether or not it removes all the stuff you gained during the combo or not.
I don't think it does. I think you keep your stuff.
In that case, yeah, even better than that. That just means there's really no penalty for screwing it up. It's just stick it out for as long as you possibly can, get that bounty, and then move on. And it doesn't feel like it's cheap in a sense where it's like, well, if there's no penalty, what's the point of trying? Like, no, it's still worth trying because the longer you hold out, the more stuff you get. And obviously there's going to be times when you attempt to do it and you just die because you don't make it that far. And that's fine. But I kind of like the idea of a game where they give you this chaining system, but at the same time, they don't make the penalty for screwing it up and having to load up an old save point or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that, like, in general, the game doesn't penalize you too badly for dying. Like, even on, like, boss fights later on, it just respawns you in the room.
Before we get too far off of combat, I would like to bring up that in the tutorial, it tells you, it trains you to use your right bumper for your attack and your right trigger for the charge, which is, like, your secondary.
Mm-hmm.
This was initially, like, I was like, that's a horrible setup and I don't like it. You can go into your settings and change that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't tell you you can do that, though. So for a while, I played like that, getting annoyed and dying on bullshit because I kept wanting to pull the trigger. And I would just like if it had just a little note in the tutorial that'd be like, you can change this in the settings.
I was going to settings first, so I knew. If I
really, really wanted to be particular, the settings only lets you flip which button does what.
Yeah.
And I would really just rather full on, for accessibility reasons, have straight up, you know, be able to change my bindings completely. But at least it does give you the option to flip them. But yeah, I would, from an accessibility standpoint, I would just rather see full on binding options.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm always ragging on games for not having just full on.
I mean, hey, at least it did let you flip it, but still, just keep.
Yeah,
I know, it's not an easy thing to program.
What about smack it up or rub it down? You do those things.
Can I mute Purnell?
If you want to, yeah.
Legally,
how do
yeah.
I do that?
Sure you can. The game does have a lot of, I should mention in the settings, it does have some nice options for setting the difficulty. Not just in combat either, but also with like kind of the timing of how the puzzles will play out later on. A lot of them have like switch triggers where it's like you'll hit something and you'll have X amount of time to do something in the environment. It'll just make those triggers last longer if you're just like a little bit slower moving around. But I appreciate that. I appreciate that being in there. Boy howdy does this game have a nice soundtrack, right?
Like, oh yeah,
wonderful music. I already bought the soundtrack, but yeah, it just sounds really great. I think the pixel art for me evokes, mainly because of just kind of the angles of the environment. It reminds me of like Chrono Trigger environments, and that there's like a lot of diagonals to them and just texture to it. But it doesn't necessarily look like that. It doesn't really look like any kind of, like, it's cribbing any kind of 16-bit game in particular, just that art style in general. And I just think it looks really good on its own, just like the detail, the environment and the characters and the monsters, I think all just like look really nice and animate really well. And the game plays really smooth. We all played it on Xbox. I did hear there was some issues on the Switch, I guess, with performance. But none of us reviewed that one, nope. So can't say for sure.
Xbox codes all around.
Yeah, it is on. It is on Game Pass, of course. That's quite a while.
Is that a new record for how long it took us to mention Game Pass?
I was about to say
it's been a while though. I don't have the recording set up properly. It's just been recording this whole time, so I don't know exactly how long
that's
it's
been.
That's
at least a half hour.
Yeah.
It's pretty long.
It's taken a while. I'm kind of disappointed in us.
Yeah, you've got to retroactively add it in there. So, Tim, Pernell, everyone, you guys there, how's Toucan it going?
Sam. Is Toucan Sam on Game Pass?
Well, $19.99 on Toucan Sam. What do you think?
Jeez, it's only $20. Just buy it. My God. That's such a good deal. Like, the game is not short either.
No.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing I wanted to warn about in general. Like, it's not a bad thing per se, but if you're looking at this, the art in the game, and you hear about the style of the game and go, oh, this is probably like an 8-hour game. It took me 5 hours just to get through Autumn Hills.
Yeah, I think I was like 8-ish hours in before I was in the first dungeon getting my first element.
I think how long the beat said it was 30 hours.
Yeah, it's supposed to be about 30 hours, and I don't know how much side questing that involves. There's a lot of side questing, and I am not doing all of them. Like, I'm doing some of them, like, if they're kind of in my way, but I'm not, like, really, like, grinding them all out. Not that they're, like, bad. There's just a lot of them, and I don't like to get in the weeds doing side quests in games.
I wish it was better at directing you where to go to turn in side quests, or at least the mapping system in general. I'm not too fond of the mapping in general.
There's not a lot of detail there. No. Yeah.
Yeah, every now and then I would get lost because a character would run off and I would go back. I will say I'm grateful that it has that system that Kimco games often have where you can press the button and see the previous dialogue.
Yes, I like that. Yep.
And so I was able to scroll back and try to get a hint of where somebody had went when I lost them.
And then the thing that they say in the text is, follow me over here. You're like, damn it.
Yeah, there were times when that happened and I was like, fuck off. And then I have to go wondering until I come across them. You know, so like a go here dumbass era would be real helpful.
I always had this weird mindset that when it comes to that stuff, like, I want that perfect balance because some games, it's like you have games like this where it's like there's no arrow. And you're like, crap, I'm lost to where I was supposed to go. But then you have other games where it's like, the arrow is just in your face to the point where why even bother paying attention to where you're going? All you got to do is stare at that arrow. It just tells you what to do. If there was like that happy medium, that's what I would like. I like the happy medium zone, whatever that would be. I want that.
Yeah, I didn't have too much trouble figuring out where I needed to go. Sometimes I did have to consult my notes and like the quest log and stuff like that just because I got a little lost, but...
It's a minor complaint, really, in the grand scheme of things.
I concur.
Pernell, Cole, $20. What do the two of you think?
I think it's a buy, to be perfectly honest with you. It's like I said, as long as you're okay with... I mean, I guess technically you only have to do the side quest, which would drastically reduce the length of the game. But if you want a lot of gameplay, it's there. If you want a short game, it could also be there. Not and really. I like the
I don't think it'll be that short.
Yeah.
Shortish. But it's a great game, honestly. I was looking forward to it for a long time and I didn't come away disappointed at all.
So I'm gonna say something that's gonna sound a little mean, but I don't mean it as mean, okay?
Dang.
But CrossCode feels like what a Kimco RPG thinks it is.
Damn. That is mean.
This is not mean, but it's true.
That is totally mean.
Tell me I'm wrong.
I don't want to acknowledge it because I'm scared.
It's not wrong.
I'm scared.
No, that's pretty accurate. Kimco, this seems to be what Kimco strives to be.
And that's not a bad thing, though. That's a mark of praise for CrossCode because it just nails it that if you're into those kind of RPGs, this is for you. It may not have necessarily been something for, and I didn't dislike it by any stretch of the imagination, but like it's not my typical genre that I just get lost into. But I could pick it up and I could play it and enjoy it and appreciate it for what it was. But the whole time I was like, this is what I'm supposed to be playing when I play a Kimco game.
I misheard you when you originally you first said your statement, but hearing it just not yet, I totally agree with you there. It does invoke the nostalgia in a way it's like, yeah, I'm having fun with this. This is a good game, and the nostalgia's hitting in all the right places. I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I can give it a buy it. I can respect it, even if it's not necessarily something that I would have picked up or installed if it weren't for the podcast. But I can see the good in it, and I can definitely see where fans of the genre would be like, this is fucking cool.
Yeah.
So, it's really cool.
General yeah. praise all around. We all enjoyed it. I agree with what everyone said, and $20 is absolutely worth it.
Yeah, do it. Yeah, they really got to charge $30 for it, honestly.
Like, hush, don't give them ideas.
Totally fine with it. I'm just
Stop
saying.
It. Stop but, like, it.
I'm just saying that's a
next
deal.
Game to talk. Next game to talk about is called 1993 Shenandoah, developed and published by Limit Break. Released July 9th on the Switch for $12.99. Towards the end of the Interstellar Wars, chaos spread and one band of elite mercenaries acted more like pirates and looters than actual soldiers. The leader of this group was the notorious and infamous Colonel Nestor. Without a doubt, the biggest prize of their looting was the Shenandoah, a device designed to terraform barren planets. With this device, Nestor and his men started to build an army that now poses a great threat to the known star systems. Your mission, take down Nestor and bring back the Shenandoah. Tim, what is this game?
Apparently, this is a game that was supposed to be released for the Amiga back in 1993.
Really?
It was originally started development in 1992. As an Amiga game, and then it got delayed, apparently, slightly, a little bit, but it has been resurrected. I was trying to figure out whether that was a work or a shoot, whether that was just kind of like the gimmick behind the game or the actual truth, but it's a fun story either way, I guess.
Yeah, props to your use of wrestling terminology in this.
Absolutely, anytime, right here for you. Either way, it has been resurrected, and released here today on the Switch, for our consumption. And it is, it is a side-scrolling space shoot-em-up of that era, if I ever saw one. Like, there's just something about, the graphics and the animation. Chris, if you played this, you're a shooter dude, right?
I am, but I have not played it.
Oh, he had to lean forward. it definitely has the look of a... Like, it reminded me of, just kind of the look of it reminded me of, like, Gates of Zendikon on the Lynx. Boy, that's an obscure one.
That is. Wow.
But it's just something about, like, the way the sprites looked and the, the shots looked, the shooting out, just, like, it just not quite, like, Super Nintendo... it was developed for like the Amiga, not that. It's a side-scrolling shooter, and you have five solar systems you're blasting your way through. Each one has you have a level where you're flying through space, approaching the planet, and then some levels on the planet. It's very big on. Like customization of your ship. So you'll get in there, like it feels good moving your ship around and kind of shooting, but like right off the bat, you are buying a ship, and spoiler, all the level one ships all are like exactly the same. But that's fine. So you pick a ship, like there's like eight different designs just for that kind of like initial ship. But then once you get through a level, maybe right off the bat, you have enough money, you can start buying upgrades for your ship, and there are a lot of them, and they are individually upgradable unto themselves. So you're like, the smaller ships will have two modules you can put, like they show up on your ship as like a satellite sitting like on top or below it or in front of it or behind it once you get bigger ships. And like you just go through, like there's probably like 20 or 30 different weapon modules you can pick up, and you know, it's things like, oh, here's something that shoots straight up and down, here's something that shoots behind you, this thing will shoot out at angles, this thing shoots like a straight laser ahead of you, this one shoots missiles, this one drops bombs, this one will bounce around the environment, this one sets out a drone to attack enemies, just tons of different stuff. This one shoots bombs, this one shoots here, this one shoots there. And pretty much after every level, you're going to have enough currency to buy something, which is cool. And unlike, I don't know, whatever that shooter was I was reviewing like a month or two ago, where you had to grind multiple levels to be able to do an upgrade, this is not that. You'll be able to buy something after every level, be it a new module, or if you just want to upgrade one of the ones you have, you can do that. You can sell stuff back. Once you get up enough money, you can upgrade to a larger ship, which can equip 4 modules. And that's cool and just gives you even more firepower, though there is the trade-off of those larger ships being larger, so they're tougher to maneuver and easier to get hit with stuff. To help mitigate that, there is something really cool is there's a shield on your ship that is positionable, so it's in kind of like a ring around your ship. And if you hit like L or R, like it'll rotate around you. So it doesn't like cover your whole ship. It's maybe, I think on the default difficulty, it's maybe like a 75% of a 360 degree. No, it'd probably be like 90, maybe a little more than that. Either way, it might cover about half of the circumference around your ship. And then, you know, if you raise up the difficulty, like it gets smaller and smaller. But that's a cool thing. So you can kind of position stuff where the shots are coming from. You can't readjust where the modules are on your ship in mid-combat, but that's kind of fine. You can do that out of combat. So yeah, you shoot your way through these levels, you fight bosses, you upgrade the crap out of your ship. It looks good, the sound is good, and it's a lot of fun to play, really.
Any gripes, any complaints?
Not really. It's like a really good classic side-scrolling shooter game. Like, there's really not much going wrong with it that I can think of. Like, the way your ship moves around feels good. Like, there's just like a ton of options to play around with, so that gives it a ton of replay value to go back to it. It's a pretty good game.
Nice. So $13, your verdict?
Yeah, that's worth it. Absolutely. Yes, that is also a buy.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, good stuff. Tim, always good having you on. We'll let you get going. We know you have your school children to deal with soon.
Yeah, I got it. Oh, God, I hope not. I don't know. It's freaking, dude, it's such a...
Fingers crossed, like, for universal last-minute teacher strike.
Dude, just like...
Yeah.
Consider that, like, New York is one of the better-off places in the country right now, and we're all still just, like, dreading the possibility of... I mean, it's a shit show either way. It's a shit show if everyone has to stay home. It's a shit show if everyone has to come to school. It's the biggest shit show if they try to do a little bit of both. So, I don't know. It's still 2 months away. A lot can change.
Oh, you guys have 2 months left?
Yeah, I mean, we don't start until after Labor Day. So it's a little less than 2 months. But yeah, we don't...
They pushed us back 3 weeks, and we're still starting in August 26th.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I've heard people make claims that they're starting school in 3 weeks. I'm like, wait, that's soon? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we normally start the first week of August.
Yeah, and the South, they start earlier.
There's other counties near us that are starting the first week of August.
Yeah, up around here, it's always the day after Labor Day is when New York schools start. So, but we don't get out till like the end of June.
Yeah, so we get out in May.
Yeah, I don't know which I prefer.
I don't know would be much better. You get some of the spring.
We had 3 options, and then like only 19% voted for the hybrid option, so they just got rid of it. Yeah.
Nobody likes that one.
It's and too much.
Then, hybrid option.
Hybrid is like you go half, like they split up and they have in certain kids in the classroom on certain days, and like they split it 50-50 between in person and NTI. NTI is non-traditional instruction, which is distance learning. But so that one, nobody liked it. So you either send your kids or you don't. And whichever option you choose, you're stuck with until after Christmas break.
Oh, man, you can choose one or the other?
Yeah, we chose NTI because number two is immunocompromised, and so am I. So yeah,
no, that's a good idea. I mean, and I also choose that because I have to go to school.
Smart option. Yeah. But, so they'll have all the same benefits as being, in class, in-person students, but they'll just have their homework uploaded to Google Classroom every day, and they do it on their own terms, which is an added benefit because we live far away from the high school, and number one has to get on the bus. She gets up at 5 a.m. to get on the bus at 6 a.m.
Ugh.
So to get to school by 7:30.
So now she's just wake up.
So at now she's just like, fuck it. I get to wake up at like 8 or 9 and start my classwork as I want to. So she's just sitting over here like, fuck yeah, party time. it's sleep ultimately in. A better, you know, ordeal for her anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, have a good night, guys.
Take it easy, Tim. Any final words?
Nope. Don't die. All right. Bye.
Don't die. There's a stick to this fish. Don't care. Don't die.
Hi. Ernell Vaughn, ladies and gentlemen. All right, next game to talk about is called Void Terrarium, developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America, released July 14th on the Switch for $24.99. In a world contaminated with toxic fungi, a discarded maintenance robot finds a lone human girl among the discarded junk in a scrapyard. To ensure her survival, the robot and a decommissioned AI known as Factory AI must create a refuge for her within a terrarium. Pernell, tell us about Void Terrarium and whatever the goofy name is that NIS has to give these titles in this series.
I got nothing on that title. That's just some... I mean, I guess the terrarium is obvious, but the void part, I don't know.
Now, I'm talking about the TRRLM open parenthesis, close parenthesis.
I ignored that.
Semicolon slash Void Terrarium.
That's art, Joe. That's art. I will say one interesting thing about this game before I talk about the game proper is that lately I have talked to people about games and the games we choose to play. And a couple of those people have made comments where it's like, you know, I'm not really feeling these post-apocalyptic games anymore, given the circumstances and all that such. I want games that don't involve that. And I will say that if that's something that you feel about gaming, this one's a little different there, because one element that I like about games is when they give you that hope of change and the ability to positively affect someone in that world despite the circumstances of that world. And I think that's a large part of what makes this game special to me. So the idea is sort of like what Joe said. You start the game out as a rat who climbs inside of a robot, which for some reason activates the robot, and then the robot meets the Factory AI, and then they together discover this girl who's there somehow. And given the circumstances, there's pretty much no reason why she should possibly be there, and yet here she is. And together, they work together to provide her a livable habitat so she can thrive and be happy in a world that, for all intents and purposes, does not want her in it. And the way this works is by the roguelike gameplay.
Yay.
Cross the Tamagotchi. Because what ends up happening is early on in the game, you end up going to different areas on the world map, which then lead to roguelike dungeon exploration. And as you explore the dungeons, you are essentially going from level to level, defeating enemies, looking for the exit, and finding items like you typically do in roguelike games. But there are a few interesting quirks about the exploration in this game, and then I'll get to the second component of the game. That is, leveling up is the first one. So, typically in a roguelike game, you're running around, you beat dudes, and eventually you level up, and your stats increase, and sometimes you might learn new skills or whatever. In this game, however, whenever you level up, the game will give you a choice of two things. Two perks, I'll call them. And they could be a variety of them. They could be a passive ability. They could be a new attack. Well, I know. There's only two they could be. A passive ability or a new attack. And they usually come with a rarity ranking of 1 to 5. So once you pick that, it becomes a part of your robot's ability pool. And then you continue to move on. Next thing aside from that. So that is also the only way you can generally get new attacks while you're running through dungeons is by getting them through these level ups. And when you use them, they drain energy. There's no MP gauge in this game. It's just the energy gauge, which is the same energy gauge that you use to run around. So you recharge that with batteries that you can find on the ground. Now, the interesting thing about this game also is that since you're in a post-apocalyptic contaminated world, the items you find sometimes are also corrupted and contaminated. And when you pick them up, the game will tell you how contaminated they are. And depending on how so, it'll affect how the item itself can get used. So you might have a healing item that in normal circumstances will just heal your hit points at 40. But when it's contaminated,
it'll heal your hit points for 30, and it'll either freeze your character or give it a boost. So it becomes riskier to use the items themselves. Hmm. But at the same time, it's like it kind of adds a little bit of charm to the running around, because like everything's not so straightforward. Sometimes you'll find stuff like, oh, I need that healing item. Oh, it's contaminated. This is trash. You know, but you're like, all right, whatever. When you die in this game, the game is, the penalty for death is not really bad. When you pass on, your character gets ejected from the dungeon, and every item that you had in your inventory, does none of it gets lost. You keep it. So what happens is, usually in roguelike games, when you die on a run, they take all your stuff and they give you some cornball reasons to why it happens that way. In the case of this game, the junkyard AI determines what's corrupt material and what's passable material. Since the robot's considered passable, he gets sent back to the hub. All of your stuff, however, gets transformed and processed into various energy resources, which will factor into the second component of the game, which I will start talking about right now. So, eventually, once you realize that you have this girl at the hub world, and that you need to take care of her, you get this added element of the game where you find eventually what's essentially a Tamagotchi device. The Tamagotchi device will display on your lower left corner of your screen. And it will just provide a certain bit of information. It will tell you how hungry the girl is. It will tell you how contaminated the girl is. As in, when you feed her food that you find in the dungeon runs, depending on how contaminated it is, you might be contaminating her. Which means you then need to disinfect her so she can get the contamination out of her system. If she uses the restroom, it'll show you that, so you have to go back and clean it, because if you don't clean the terrarium, well, then guess what? Just like a Tamagotchi, she will get sick. So you got to take care of that business, too. Now, admittedly, you can also clean while running in the dungeons proper, but it drains a lot of energy to do that, so you're almost happier to leave the dungeon. And due to the fact that the main component of the game is more so about the girl than about the dungeon crawling, you are actually not even penalized for leaving. You can leave dungeon runs whenever you want. Without penalty. You don't have to carry a stupid exit dungeon item like you do in all those other games. You just leave when you want. And then you can go back and help her out. Of course, all this convenience in the dungeon crawling comes at a cost, which is that the game over mechanic is different in this game. Normal dungeon games, it's about, you know, maybe you might run out of time if the game has a time cycle, or you might die in certain dungeons and lose. But in this game, if the girl dies, it's a game over. She's the most important part of the game. And sometimes you'll be on a dungeon run, and the Tamagotchi device will go, basically saying, get the hell out. Something is wrong. And when that happens, you need to leave. You need to help that little girl. Now, the typical element of roguelike games also is the fact that even though you lose everything, quote unquote, when you leave a dungeon, like your levels and stuff, there's usually that added thing that they provide that makes it that you're a little stronger with subsequent runs. In the case of this game, there's a few things they did for that. As you acquire resources and materials for blueprint construction, which you can use to create objects to put inside of the girl's terrarium, every time you build something for the very first time, you'll get a permanent perk, whether it'll be more inventory space for your robot, or the girl's stomach might get a little bigger so she can hold more food, or just general perks that make either taking care of her or running in dungeons more convenient. You can also construct, I guess, gears or cogs, which you can equip to the robot, which will allow you to alter the probability of certain skills or abilities popping up on the level up tree when you level up in the dungeon runs. You can also eventually make it possible to take a skill into the dungeon with you permanently, so you don't have to hope to find it. You can just go in and start with it, which is very convenient. But the game itself is an enjoyable time. Like, the one downside I can say that I can think of is that a lot of these kinds of games, usually you beat a dungeon, a new area unlocks because of a new dungeon, blah, blah, blah. But in this game, areas unlocked by plot. So early on, you'll be finding yourself going to the same few areas multiple times because you're trying to find supplies to build the required stuff to keep the girl alive. Or you might not have enough food in your safe to take care of the girl, so you got to go to the one area that you believe has food and then just try to scavenge for it. Oh, worth also mentioning about the food. I ain't anything to mention.
Food is something you find in the dungeon that you have to feed to the girl to keep her alive. But just like the other stuff, food can also become contaminated. So not only is food rare, but it can also be contaminated. In which case, when you put it in the safe, after you leave a run, you have a certain number of runs before the food becomes overly contaminated and rotted. So you're like, okay, I got this food in the safe. It should be good for a few runs or a few days, quote unquote. But then eventually you gotta either ditch it or feed her. But if the food is hyper contaminated, eventually that's what's going to lead to her getting sick from feeding contaminated, wasted food.
Yeah.
And eventually she could also get to a point where she can't even eat solid food anymore. She got to blend the food into a slurry and then feed her the slurry. There's a lot going on here, but when you actually got it going right and she's clearly happy, you give her some furniture, she's got trees and she's happy and you can go up and they give you the option to press A to nurture. It feels great. It's a wonderful feeling to see the kid happy in the game. And it feels good to see, believe it or not, the factory AI happy. Because even the computer is like, it's an expressive face on like a monitor. But it feels good when the computer's like, yay, she's okay. You know, because the computer, this isn't a spoiler because it happens, they bring up at the very beginning of the game. The computer, they reveal early on that the computer is the reason that AI, that humanity is no more. Like something happens between the humanity and that computer that results in the AI just wiping humans out. So there's a part of her that's like, she feels really bad because it was like, it's almost like it had its own emotions where it's like, I really wish I didn't do that. It just kind of how it happened. I don't know. But with the girl, she's like, I don't want to be lonely anymore. I don't want to make the same mistake again. We have to do this. So she's like in it for the long haul to save this kid, and the robot's helping. And it's just seeing the AI happy and seeing the girl happy. It feels good, man. It's great. Like, I had a wonderful time with this game. And I if you like roguelikes, and even if you're like kind of like slightly off on them a little, and there's like maybe it's that light element that make you miss out and like not want to play them so much, this game might fix some of that. It's a quality product and something that I'm glad that NIST put out, because this is the company I think that also did like Rose in the Twilight and what's that other game they had? I don't even remember the name of it anymore, but basically Rose in the Twilight is the most recent one they did that had this art style and all that. And I think this is like a good update to that style of gameplay or that style of art in use in their games, and I highly recommend it. It's a good product.
All right, so $25. Your thoughts?
I think it's a buy-buy.
A bye-bye or a bye-bye?
A bye-bye.
Okay.
Purchase this game. It's good.
Because if you're saying bye-bye to the game, that's not good.
Well, this is an R&B song. It's like, bye-bye the game because you want to play. That's different.
Pernell Vaughn, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll be here all week, folks.
All right, next game to talk about is called Towaga Among Shadows, developed by Sunnyside Games, published by Noodle Cake, which is an amazing name. Released July 14th on Steam for $14.99, coming later this summer to PS4 and is available now on the Switch. Towaga Among Shadows is an action-packed shoot-em-up arcade adventure inspired by 2D classic animation. Embark on a journey to combat the darkness and find the light within you. Chris, what is Towaga?
Inspired by 2D anime. Oh, okay, I get it, what they're saying. Okay.
Yeah, inspired by classic 2D animation.
Yeah, for some reason my brain turned that into like 8-bit stuff, because so many games that we review are like arcade action inspired by 8-bit. And I'm like, okay, yeah, 2D animation. That actually does make sense. Yes, so Towaga. So this is a game wherein you play a green kid in a mask. This is normal, and you are you're sort of like the destined laser powered superhero that is supposed to save the world from Metnol, not mental, Metnol.
Metnol.
Which is Metnol.
Metnol.
Metnal.
Metnol.
The Void right. Master. He's the Void Master. Anyways, so this guy sends tons of little shadowy cretins, and you are to basically enact a light of judgment against them and just fry them all, you know, to infinity and beyond. So the gameplay takes place in a, you know, in a number of like different locations, but each one, you basically are placed in the middle of the screen somewhere, and you are stationary. The only things that you do are use the right stick of whatever you're using, or the mouse in this case, if you want to switch to mouse controls. And you basically, it's like a twin stick shooter, but one of the twins isn't there. So it's like,
so it's a stick shooter.
It's a one stick shooter. Yeah. In that, in these levels. And, when you aim the stick, then you just fire this just gigundo, like huge beam of light that incinerates all these enemies and stuff. And for the first few levels, you're going to be like, well, this is easy. All you got to do is sit here and sweep it back and forth. And, you know, you kind of have to juggle a little bit between enemies who take a little longer to kill, but are slower, and then enemies who are a little faster. But then after a few levels, yeah, they start swarming in and you really have to juggle with your time. Which is actually pretty cool. And then every once in a while, I don't know if it's consistently every 10 levels. So like there's three parts to the game, and the first part is 42 levels or 42 phases. So they're not like different levels. It's just like, it's a start and stop point to the madness. In the story mode, of course, and we'll get to the other modes in a minute. But every now and then, and I want to say it's every 10 levels, you get to take off into the sky, and now the twins are back together again, because you get free motion around the stage, but it's still closed off on every side by laser walls. Not good laser walls like your lasers, but bad lasers because they're purple. Your good lasers are yellow. And the same enemies are, you know, attacking you and stuff, and you still have to pull the same moves, but now you can move around and dodge a little bit, which is pretty cool. And the other function that you get in the game is a magic spell, which you can choose as a loadout. I don't think you can choose it in the middle of the action, but I know you can do it as a loadout. Either way, they assign it supposedly to the left bumper button or shoulder button. But despite all the controller settings, my PS4 controller that my computer thinks is an Xbox One controller, it never worked. I don't know what's up. I've had issues on Steam with this controller, so I'm not going to put that on the developer. That must be my thing. I had to switch over to the mouse in order to get my magic spells. Now, magic spells actually do cost. Or, you know, they're on a timer or something like that. It just depends on the context of what you're doing. But it basically is like a super powered, but usually closer range type of move. Like you could freeze enemies, petrify them, blast them even harder. And that's great for when in the later levels, when they actually start really piling onto you. Because once you have a life bar, so you can, it's not just one hit and you're dead. Like, you actually get a pretty beefy defense system, which you can raise. I'll get back to that in a second. But yeah, when these enemies start charging you, it's one of those things where it's just like the damage starts compounding and you really have to fight them off. And that's where like a spell comes in real handy, because you just go bam. And then, you know, the ones closest to you get, you know, fried. And so, yes, that is the game. Like, you just, sometimes you have to fight a boss, but, you know, bosses have, again, you're not dodging them or anything. Like, usually, in order to avoid a shot, you just have to, shoot it, like, before it gets to you. And when you're in stationary mode, and when you're flying, obviously, you can dodge things. But, yeah, you know, that's basically the game. But, like I said, between these, phases, so when you destroy enemies, you collect souls, which are just, you know, points, and obviously they're currency, and you can spend that currency on improving your character. Yay! So you can make your beam stronger, you can make it bigger, you can improve your amount of magic, you can improve your you know, your life goes up every now and then, and you know, you can improve that as well. You can improve like a few different aspects of your character. You can also unlock different things, including different costumes, but I didn't unlock any costumes. I dumped all my points into stats, because that's just the kind of player I am. But I'm sure they're great. Anywho's, so other things that you get to do in this game, there is actually a multiplayer aspect where you can fight your friends with giant lasers, which sounds pretty exciting. I don't have anybody to do that with, but I did check it out, and it's up to 4 players.
Ooh.
Yeah, and you know, if you've got that many controller profiles on your Steam, then you can, you know, get that going. And I guess one person could be on the mouse if they want to win. so, you know, like I said, I played with the controller for a long time, and then like I switched it over to the mouse just to be like, well, let's see what we can do here. And I actually really like the mouse because you just move the cursor around, and that's where your laser goes, and then the I think it's like you have to left click to fire, and then if you right click, it uses your magic. It's so easy.
Nice.
But I mean, it's easy either way. Maybe it's just my controller. But interestingly, it does have profiles for a Steam controller, Xbox One, PS4, and Switch. I've never actually seen a Steam game with a Switch controller layout. But really, all it does is it just changes the descriptions of the buttons. It's like, you know. Because again, you're using one, maybe two sticks and one button, so that's not too technical or anything. So aesthetically, the art is 2D animated, and it looks really, really good. Backgrounds are, you know, gorgeously painted. There's little touches like the night sky will actually have constellations drawn into it and things like that. I like that.
Cole, you're the art snob. What do you think?
I don't think I saw what the game you guys were talking about was.
Tawaga.
I didn't see anything about it. Hold on. I
thought you played this one.
No.
I think she played Distraint, right?
Yeah.
I thought you were backing him up on Tawaga, too.
No.
Oh.
Hmm.
Oh.
I'll have to check my notes.
I think your notes are wrong. I'm pretty sure you didn't give me this one.
Hmm.
Hmm. Chris, well, $15 on Tawaga. What do you think of it?
I think it's good. I think that the difficulty spikes up just enough where it eventually makes the simplicity not only worth it, but welcome. And yet it's accessible enough that you get several levels before you're going to really, you know, start to get super challenged. And I like that the character has growth. I love the aesthetics. Yeah, it's a good game all around. Oh. So I would say it's a buy it.
Cool beans. Cole, were you about to say something?
Yep.
What?
It didn't install on Steam. That's why it added it, but it didn't install, and that's why I forgot about it. I'm sorry.
Proud of you.
I made a mistake.
It's okay. It's your turn anyway, because the next game to talk about is Superliminal, developed and published by Pillow Castle Games, released July 7th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $19.99. Falling asleep at 3 a.m., you close your eyes to the cheesy commercial of Dr. Pierce's dream therapy program. You wake up in an unfamiliar environment only to realize that you're stuck in a dream where perception is reality. Welcome to Superliminal. Cole, what is this game?
Superliminal is a first-person puzzle game that basically just fucks everything you know about perception and reality. Because it takes place in a dream state, and I'd love to like be able to dive into its narrative, but I kind of can't without giving away major spoilers. But beyond what you've already said, just you are in a dream state in the game. And this gives you the opportunity to manipulate items in the world to solve puzzles. But when I say manipulate items, I don't mean pick up a block and put it in a location. You're going to do that to start with. But immediately you discover that if a block is large, you can look at it at a different perspective and make it small. So if you're holding something close to you and it looks large, because obviously it's close, if you kind of shift the way that it's being held in the space of the room that you're in so that it looks like it's further away from you, it's going to shrink down and become smaller. And then when you drop it and you go back and pick it back up, it's going to be small. Does that sound like a mind fuck?
Just a little. Yeah.
Good, because it is.
Yeah, this game seems really true. Didn't Grant cover it on PC back when it first launched?
Maybe.
Or good old friend Stemage. I know, I saw Stemage
play it once, too. And he played it on PC. It's really difficult to like explain it and have it make sense. And yet when you're in the game and you're putting that mechanic to use, it makes sense and it works. It's one of those that you're like, if I tell you I'm moving it around and it looks bigger or smaller and then I drop it and it is bigger or smaller, you're like, the fuck are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense. But when you're in the game and you're in that dream world and you're like, okay, this is a tiny space and that's a big block of cheese, but it's far away, so it looks small. And so if I grab it from over here while it looks small, then prospectively I can pull it to me and it is small. It's kind of like how you see people and they're like, look, I'm holding the moon, right?
Or like I'm squishing you,
yeah,
with your fingers.
It's that concept, but in practice.
Interesting.
So, you know, in one room, I was stuck, and there was nothing around, and I had a plate, and I needed something to stand on the plate so that the door would be open. Because oftentimes, you can't go through doors if you're carrying items. You can't take things with you. It's either you work with what you got, or you're shit out of luck, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was in a room by myself, couldn't come or go with anything. I could go between spaces, but if I tried to take something with me, the door would blur out and I couldn't go. But then I noticed literally that there was just a tiny little crack in the wall. And if I angled myself just right, I could see a tiny little wedge of cheese on a plate. And so then I can pick up that tiny wedge of cheese. I can bring it into the room with me because perspective, and then if I looked up at the ceiling with it and kind of moved a little bit, it would look bigger, and then I could drop it on the plate and I could leave the room.
That is trippy.
And I want to point out that because that is trippy, if you have problems with vertigo or motion sickness or you get nauseated in games for any reason whatsoever, take that into consideration before you play Superliminal. I did not expect. I play first-person games all the time. Yeah, I get sick sometimes if there's like certain types of ocean-y movement, or if there's a lot of super flashing of lights and it gets really heavy and I'm like playing it at night when I'm tired or something, then I kind of struggle and I'll get a little sick. Superliminal didn't give a fuck what time of day I played it. I'm already like getting sweats just thinking about playing it, like imagining the perspective shifting, and my brain is going, no, don't do that.
Jeez.
thankfully, it's a short game. There's actually an achievement for knocking it out in half an hour.
Wow.
So there's one for an hour and one for half an hour. So they really mean for you to like play it over and over and learn how to find the items in the room that are really going to get you out of there quickly.
And speedrun strats.
Yeah, I'm not going to ever be able to do that. I have to stop and puke too many times.
Yep, speedrun to the puke bucket. Do you still have it by your desk?
I had to get it when I was playing Superliminal and put it there because there were a couple times where I was playing it and then I was like, oh, I have to just turn this off and go lay down. So I was surprised it bothered me that bad because it didn't feel like it was a game that should have bothered me. But I guess because you're constantly moving around and shifting your perception, that it was just like my brain was going, we're not doing this. That said, I think it's a super creative game. I think it's really well executed. I will say that the voice acting in the game, sometimes you will have like an AI system speaking to you over like a speaker system. And then sometimes there you will find radios with a little bit of story exposition. The voice actors for these two situations, I get it for the AI, but for the audio recordings, like sometimes they're saying things and you're like, I clearly know that's supposed to be a joke, but they say it so flat and dry that it just doesn't hit.
Mm.
And you're like, I would have just been content constantly going through the rooms and never hearing those voices. They didn't add as much as they thought they added. they help to have a little bit of the story backing, but even without that narrative, the concept was so cool, and there was enough that you could gather around just the general atmosphere and everything, the clues that are in the environment that you're like, well, I don't really need what they're saying to get the gist of what's going on. One of my favorite things is that there's a little hit in a game where it almost tries to be a horror game. Almost tries. Because, like, you're in this building for this one level, and you walk into a room, and there's red mirrored across the floor. Everything is super dark. And there's like, a menu chalkboard on the wall. And it's like, Sunday, murder. You know, Monday, murder. Tuesday, quit. And it goes all the way down through the week, and it says murder is on the menu. And then on Sunday, it says beans.
Nice.
I don't know why I'm so tickled by the murder beans. But then they carry that on, and later on, you're in like a cafeteria-type restaurant area, and there's cans of beans, and I'm just like, murder beans!
Oh, I was so happy.
I was like, of all the jokes that they've tried to cram into the game, that was the one that worked.
Murder beans was the victor.
The murder beans wins it all. And I was just like, I don't get why that's so fucking funny. But every game ever could have murder beans, and I'd be happy as a pig in mud.
I forget what Chris said the title of the episode should be, so I'm just going to call it Murder Beans now.
It is now Murder Beans. I've even got a screenshot of the menu, and I will send it to you. You can have the Murder Beans. But yeah, I everything is... I wouldn't say that, like, it's hyper-realistic or anything, but the environment works, and it looks real enough that you feel like, yeah, this could be a dreamscape. I'm in it. Sometimes the solutions, I thought for the most part I was doing really well. Sometimes, though, they get a little obtuse, and you're just like, I don't know who the fuck thought that was going to work. Like, there's one where there's a fan blowing. You have to, like, clone the apples to make more of them of different sizes. And, like, the fan is blowing the apples around, which is just really weird because there are these huge giant apples. And, I mean, it's a big fan, and I know this is a dream, but fuck. Those are some empty-ass apples. But, like, the whole concept is, like, level your perception so you're pulling the clones over the plate you need them on, and you can't see the fan. And I'm like, who thought of that? Who thought that was a strategy? I had to get a god. I was like, what the fuck am I doing with this fucking apples and fan? I don't understand. And then one other thing that I run into is that the strategy I was watching, somebody had clearly played it on PC, and their settings were a lot brighter, and they could actually see where they were. In some of the areas on the game, the Xbox doesn't have any gamma controls, and mine is set to use HDR. And so there was some super black-ass rooms that I couldn't figure out anything in. And I'm like, well, I can't see a thing. I'm just going to have to walk and hope I don't fall in a murder hole. Or I'm going to be the beans. There are some murder holes. You got to watch out for the murder holes. Murder beans. But yeah, it was just a gamma slider would go a long way. Let me adjust my brightness a little because it does get super dark in some areas. And if I've missed collectibles there, I will never find them.
No, all games should have a gamma slider.
Yeah. I mean, if it weren't for the fact that there's collectibles and stuff, I probably wouldn't care as much because at least it's like, well, the most you're missing is like some paint cans on a shelf or something. But and at least even when it's dark, if there's something you can interact with, the cursor shows up. But it would be nice to be able to adjust that. When I saw other people's videos, I was like, holy fuck, that's a big difference. They could see everything and I couldn't see shit.
Damn.
So that would be really the only thing that I would complain about. Like, there were sensitivity options and everything else, and I was like, fuck yeah, you guys are on a roll. Subtitles and all that, but no brightness settings. And that shit was dark. But beyond that, super cool game, super cool concept. Might fuck with your stomach a little bit, but I should tread with caution. You should definitely tread with caution. I want to say there are world record speed runs where people have completed it in 23 minutes.
Jeez.
You're not doing that your first playthrough, though, so no. Just go ahead and suck that up. That ain't happening. But I made really good time, and I was like an hour 10 on my first run through, even with stopping to puke. So I was like, that's the sub 1 hour speed run is probably pretty doable for most people, but that sub 30 just needs to fuck off.
Yeah. Well, overall $20. What do you think?
I give it a buy it. I think that this kind of puzzle game is, we don't have enough of them. So many puzzle games, they want to, you know, just be a puzzle in an action game, just be a puzzle in an adventure game. Like, no, this is just a straight up walk into a room, figure out the puzzle, walk out. And I was really on board for it. We need more of that.
Yeah. Everything doesn't have to be puzzle slash.
Yeah. Like, puzzles are plenty sufficient. And it's such a simple concept that to be able to make a full, you know, a full length game around just look somewhere else to make the puzzle different.
No.
Was really creative.
Well, speaking of puzzles, the next game to talk about is called Distraint 2, developed by Jesse McConan, published by Rattle Lake Games, released July 10th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $8.99. Ewer Price, a man who sold his humanity to get a partnership from a leading company, McDade, Burton, and more, collect items and solve puzzles to progress through the story and find out if Price can reclaim his lost soul. Chris, tell us about Distraint 2.
Okay, Distraint 2. Well, okay, so this is I guess you can call it a horror game, but I would call it maybe more of a, like, I guess it's like a psychological terror adventure, because it's one of those things where it's all about kind of the ambience sort of making you uneasy, and then things happen and, you know, you like react to them and you like do other things, but mostly it's dialogue and running around and exploring, and then, you know, like I said, solving the odd puzzle. So this is a like one of those strange retro throwbacks where it's like it is a sprite based retro sort of looking pixely game, but there's way too many pixels for it to be traced back to any classic system. I mean, it's basically like a pixel art type piece, and man, such pixel art. It actually is a very, very good looking game. Especially the backgrounds, holy moly. Although the characters themselves are these kind of exaggerated, you know, really big heads, little stick-like limbs, kind of, you know, cartoony folks. It still does a good job in, like, in making them seem like kind of realistic people and stuff like that. So I appreciate the art direction in this most of all. But yeah, you play Price, and basically the story opens up with him sort of describing this terrible company and how he you know, did these things that he's not proud of, and then it, you know, all kind of amounts to a sort of like breakdown with suicidal ideation, and or he actually goes through with it. We actually don't know. It's a mystery. He might have killed himself, but maybe didn't. Either way, he gets transported into this world that is like this kind of dark, murky, you know, mansions and swamps and whatnot, where he's being, you know, chased by a scary creature, and also running into characters who have, you know, really telling names like Hope and Agony, and, you know, there's Reason is your main guide through the game, of course. It's an old man with a giant, like, backpack or something like that. Like, just, and Reason is kind of like your point of contact and sort of like explaining what's going on. And, you know, the whole thing basically plays out like a mystery, but it's, very much. It's kind of like a walk and click, is what I'm starting to try and call them, where you don't actually like use a cursor to look for anything like that. You just walk around until something's highlighted and then you pick it up or
walk and click. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I played enough of them now where I'm thinking this is maybe a good term for a subgenre. So it is a walk and click. You only go left and right, and each area that you go into, usually you advance through going through doors. If you try to go left or right, then the darkness, you know, goes around you and like things start glitching out and like this scary whooshy sound happens. Basically, it's a terror wall that you just it's an interesting way to be like, you can't go here. They're like, we're going to spook you. But yeah, you like walk around and, you know, like basically pick up an item and then you'll see something that you can maybe interact with. And then you just choose the item by pushing up or down. The only places you can move is left and right, and you can walk or you can run. Usually, I mean, I haven't really found a need to run yet in the game, but, you know, if something chases you, then, you know, there might be a hiding spot or something like that. And then, you know, that kind of advances the story. But really, I mean, it really felt to me playing through this that the stakes were pretty low. It's more like you're going through ambience that kind of disturbs you and throws you off. But you're really in it to learn more about this character and more about his inner workings and stuff. And it actually tells more of a story than I was expecting. So I quite like that about it. The music is interesting because it's not really music. It's like, it's noises meant to like heighten emotional response. That is to say, like when you are in a scary situation, then it's just like these scary cacophonous like noises that like raise in volume, but there's no real tune to it or anything like that. But then when there's actual music, when you get to somewhere that's more delightful, like the game actually does give you a break in kind of lets you escape to what they call the realm of hope, where you are like imagining a better life for yourself and like the background suddenly beautiful and, you know, scary things don't happen, but then you get, you know, thrown back into the muck, as it were. So yeah, it's a really interesting experience. A little light on the challenge. I noticed the puzzles were kind of, I mean, maybe they get harder later, but the first couple are no-brainers. Like, you just find the thing and use it on literally the other thing that is there for you to use. And then, you know, you turn circles around until they match up. Like, but, you know, it probably gets, like, difficult more towards the end. But, yeah.
Cole, did you beat the game?
I didn't beat it, but I also didn't want to use a guide for it. Because Distraint, the first game was one of my favorite Rattalaika games ever.
Nice.
And so this one so far, I'm pretty good into it. And I have to say it's definitely holding up as far as like being a suitable sequel. I will say I didn't think Distraint was ever a game that was going to get a sequel.
Yeah, I didn't think so either, but it's cool that it did.
When you said Distraint 2, I was like, did you typo? Is that a mistake?
Yeah, and that's so, the thing. They don't really, that's the thing, coming into this game, not having played the first game, which now I want to play it, it really doesn't give you a very good sense of how much of this was covered in the first game, you know?
Yeah, that whole opening sequence is essentially, like, the closest you're going to get to a replay of what happens in the first. Gotcha. I will say that I think story-wise, I think that even though it's still borders on that psychological horror territory, it's a little more hopeful and promising. Like, the whole first game, you're just like, this is not gonna go well. And then it doesn't. But throughout Distraint 2, I've been like, I mean, the whole point is you're looking for hope.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say, is that it really feels like a more positive game than it's being painted as. And what I like about it as well is, and this is something that the creator, who, by the way, apparently is just one guy.
Yep.
One little Finnish dude. Yep.
He makes a point to mention that he made the game without any gore and without any jump scares.
Mm-hmm. He does it on purpose.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, that it creates that ambience without falling into those traps, I think is a real good testament to its quality. Plus, it allows people who are commonly turned away from the horror genre, it kind of like maybe gives them a little bit more of an in. Because it wouldn't work if it wasn't horror. But at the same time, it's not going to like freak you out. There's a few, there's ghosts and at least one dead body.
But, I think it's unsettling without being horrifying.
Yeah, that's why it was like...
The first one was definitely horrifying. Even without the jump scares and stuff, it was far more just bleak and grim and just like the weight of it hung on you as you played. Whereas The Strain 2 does not have that heavy burden, at least for a good chunk of it. You're like, things can go well. There's an up, whereas the first one never had an up.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, $9 on this one. What do you two think?
Cole, do you want to go first?
I give it an absolute buy it. I'm so, like I said, I didn't want to use a guide on it, so it's taking me a little longer. I enjoyed the first so much, I just wanted to enjoy the second as well. And I haven't been let down. I think if you're looking for that grim, heavy narrative, this is a little on the lighter side, and it's a little more forgiving in its story. But I still think it's got plenty enough of the psychological elements to it that it's still going to rope in that same crowd. And I'm not disappointed, and I don't think anybody else will be either. We kind of have a running joke with Rattleika games that, they're quick, easy, mundane completions. But Distraint is definitely one of the standouts, and Distraint 2 just carries that on through.
Cool. Chris, thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's actually a buy it as well. I'm thinking that maybe my praise of it would be more effusive if I had played the first one, perhaps. Because right now it feels like I'm kind of like unraveling a mystery of what happened in the first game, or like trying to tie it into things from the first game. But at the same time, it's still engaging and interesting. And again, I really, really enjoy the art. I think it's a very good looking game.
Awesome. Speaking about games with good art, the next game to talk about is called Waifu Uncovered.
Oh my god.
Developed by One Hand Free Studios, published by East Asia Soft. It released July 16th on the Switch for $6.99. Destroy the clothes, save the waifus. Eight beautiful maidens are under threat of alien attack. Their lives and the fate of the world now rest in your hands. In this simple yet rewarding shoot 'em up, take command of multiple ship types, each balanced for a different playstyle, and blast away clothing that's been deeply infected by a deadly virus. Evade and destroy enemies as they feverishly work against you. Team up in multiplayer or bravely battle alone. Save the girl of your dreams and perhaps even unlock a convenient one-finger mode. Purnell, tell us about Waifu Uncovered.
This will be quick, I swear to God. Waifu Uncovered. It's the internet. You know what to do. But
Cole, we've been reviewing hentai games on the regular for the past month.
I know. Everything about the setup for this one, though, it doesn't even try to hide it.
No, it doesn't. And that's what's beautiful about hysterical. This game.
That's right. It's hysterical.
It knows what it is, and it is proud of it, and it wears it proudly on its sleeve.
I was going to say, it wears it on its sleeve, but then it takes off the shirt. So there you go.
Takes it all.
It's like she says in The Division, off comes the prom dress.
They say that in The Division?
Yes.
Oh, mercy.
Yes. She's basically trying to say, if you don't get this right, you're fucked. Off comes the prom dress.
Division Uncovered. Ooh. But Waifu Uncovered. Not quite Division-y. But, so this game is essentially a shooter. And it has two modes, though. They both pretty much play exactly the same. I'm not quite sure what the difference was between them, with the exception of first thing I'll name them, which is one mode is arcade mode, and the other one is, I guess I want to call it story mode, but essentially they play, from what I can tell, the same way, except arcade mode has one extra girl in it, whereas the previous mode only has seven. Now, when you start playing the game, you have to choose one of the game's available ships. You start out only having access to one, but as you play the game more, you unlock additional ships that you can choose from. They all have a variety of different stats, ranging from speed to power levels associated with the different modifiers you can get for the different gun turrets, like laser or multi-fire, things of that nature. There's different attack bonuses and stuff. So once you've chosen your ship, the game will give you the choice of two girls. One girl usually being like the base difficulty and the other girl being at a harder difficulty for the game's sake. Being me, I always pick the hard difficulty because, you know, let's see how hard this game can get. And the answer is not too hard, but if you're not careful, you will probably die. But overall, it's not too hard of a game. Now, once you've chosen the girl, what they'll do is they'll bring you to the stage itself. And all the stages are in the game are technically just a still image of the girl you're trying to save, but you move around to different areas of said girl. So, like, the first, you might be fighting a moment where, like, the background is just the girl's face, and then the next part might be, like, I don't know, like, her hand holding a pickaxe or something. You know, just whatever the game wants you to do at the time, but it's just different areas of the image. Now, I think you said you played this too, Joe, so you might have a better understanding of this because I didn't quite pick it up. Sometimes when the game starts or stage starts, it will kind of kick off kind of like Gradius, where the enemies will kind of come in like various patterns. And if you destroy all the different patterns, you'll get power-ups from them. And if you manage to kill every enemy on this screen, on this section of the stage, you'll unlock clear view mode, which is basically, it removes the fuzz from the image that's in the background, so it's more clear. Then at that point, you go on to the normal stage itself, which again is still the image of the girl in the background, but now enemies are coming in from all over the screen. Sometimes they come from the left, the right, top, or bottom. Doesn't matter. And you're basically shooting enemies to take them out. Every once in a while, since there's no corridors or anything that you're flying through to dodge and evade, because again, the stage is literally just the girl's image in the background. Sometimes you'll get these balls that will fall from the top of the screen that are pretty much meme images, like that, just like that weird grumpy meme face, but it's in a giant spherical orb and it's flying down. So you have to dodge them. Sometimes you can break them, but for the most part, you're dodging and evading. The stage itself then becomes a series of six moments. And for each of these moments, what happens is you destroy enemies, which then will release ninja stars. And I'm not making that up. They're purple freaking ninja stars. And you pick them up for points. But also, after a certain period of time, after collecting enough stars or whatnot, that section of the stage will be cleared off, and an article of clothing will be removed from the girl, thereby moving you to the next section, which again is just another area of the image where you're attacking enemies with the intent being to remove another article of clothing from the girl. Until eventually she's buck naked in the background and the boss appears. And then the boss is usually some dopey thing related to the stage you're on. And it's not just a turd, but whatever. You're just fighting a weird boss. And then when you eventually beat the boss, you will you'll move on to the next stage. But then sometimes you'll unlock a new ship, or you might unlock uncensored mode, which is basically the game, same image, but now you can see her breasts. Not the cooter.
Anime titties.
Pretty much.
I noticed that there was it was called Uncensored 1, so I wonder if there's a second uncensored tier that you can unlock that has full nudity. I don't know. It's funny as hell that we're talking about this game on the Switch.
I think I've lost the hit for that. Not in a bad way, just more like they've done. It's happened a lot now. Like it's been a long enough time that the Switch is officially like kind of just that system. It's like, well, if you want to put it on here, we'll take it. they've kind of lost that whole family friendly image, which isn't a bad thing because ultimately Nintendo's games still contain that. But if you're buying the system expecting this to be like an open season on children's love, well, you might want to watch your balls because waifu might get uncovered on your Switch, and then that'll be a bit of an issue. Believe it or not, I pretty much described the entire game in its own right because every level is essentially that exact same formula, but eventually you unlock more ships, which determine different configs of the stats for the different ships, which also determines how power-ups will flow because as you play through the level and you destroy enemies and power-ups appear, depending on how much your ship maxes at, like if you have a high speed stat, speed power-ups will go at a higher threshold. So you can get 8 speed stats or speed items to get a max speed on a fast ship, whereas a slow ship might only have two to max it out. So, because it's a slow freaking ship. So you'll be noticing stuff like that. But for the most part, arcade mode and the other mode is pretty much exactly that. They both play pretty much identically. One finger mode, I didn't even bother with, believe it or not. I did unlock it, but for whatever reason, I didn't even try it. I just pretty much ran through normal mode and I ran through arcade mode. I always picked the hardest stage when they gave me the option between the two. I don't think I unlocked anything special because I did that, but that's how I played it because I figured if I want to play, I want to challenge.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, though, I will say this, though. I'm going to leave with this part, though. The enemies are freaking stupid. Like, I didn't care about any of them. They were literally floating meme images. They were dumb. But the game itself, once I got into it, I actually had fun playing it. I enjoyed surviving through the stages. You do end up evading a lot of bullet fire. The enemies do become relentless towards the later end of the game, but if you're good at shooters in any way, shape, or form, you won't ultimately have too many issues with it. But it doesn't mean you can sleep at the switch. You will be actually dodging and evading and shooting and trying to go for a high score. I had fun playing it. I can't deny that fact. It was fun. Just that the enemies are just dumb. But it's a shooter. If I'm engaged, I'm just trying to blow everything up and not get hit. And in that case, this game succeeded at that. I enjoyed playing it.
And it's a shooter where you're just trying to see anime titties. So
pretty much. Literally that.
So for $7, does this give you your fill of anime titty?
I would say it did. I actually enjoyed playing the game, and the only thing I regret, or I wish, as dumb as it may sound, I wish I had more girls in it. Because, again, each girl was a stage. There's 8 stages. I wish there was more stages. Yeah. But overall, I enjoyed what I played of it, and it's a nice little diversion to play through. And it's not too expensive either, so that's fine.
Maybe, I will say maybe we'll get Wife 2.
Waifu 2.
Can I hang up?
No, Waifu 3.
Waifu.
Yeah. But honestly, I would honestly give it a genuine try to buy it. Buy it, obviously, if you're all about the anime titty, but if you're like shooters and you're indifferent on that element, so try it.
I can agree with that. It's a fun, competent shooter, and if you're looking for titties in a Switch game, this will give you titties in a Switch game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Final game to talk about tonight is from Marginal Act. We've covered this guy's games on the show before, and they are always incredibly odd. This one is called Need a Packet, developed by Marginal Act, published by Sometimes You, releasing July 24th on Switch, PS4, and Vita for $6.99. Beep, beep, beep. That's what you'll hear in your head all day after playing Need a Packet. Go crazy. Chris, what?
What? I was looking up Marginal Act, and I was like, oh, okay. I'm seeing Vasilis, which we had covered. Looks like is one of the ones that I've talked about. And then there's some that actually look really odd that I actually want to play.
Yeah, he's got, what was the one we covered? I think Bloody Trains.
Yeah, that looks like that's, is that the newest one? I guess that's the newest one, yeah. Well, Need a Pack, it's a little older. Well, not on Switch, obviously. It just came out. But, like, in the grand scheme of games, at least looking at this Steam release date. Okay, so, Need a Packet is a really interesting kind of mix of ideas. And actually, I wouldn't have expected it to be the same as Vasilis or whatever, except the sort of political undertone of it that doesn't actually factor into the gameplay whatsoever. Like that, you could draw a straight line between the two games for that. But yes, so the way the game plays is that you are a lady who has a job as a supermarket cashier, and you start the game on her first day. And she's literally standing there in her underwear, shaking and being like, don't want to be late for my first day. Like, it's everything's presented in this 8-bit, like, pixel art. But unlike the last game, this one is not gorgeous. It is the exact opposite. Everything is designed to look bad, which, you know, again, like Vasilis, that's, you know, that's a trademark of this this particular developer, I think.
Yeah.
And so what you do is you have to just select your clothes, and then she puts them on, and then you select the door and leave, and then you get on the train. Now, the bus. The bus has a kind of timer where you are basically killing time until you can get to work. And you have your phone. Your phone has four apps on it. One is to check your emails, which are always from your boss. And your boss is like, he goes from like cartoonishly bad and abusive to like just kind of normal if you're good at the game. Because, you know, he goes from like, don't think I can't hurt you, to like, have a great day at work. Like, because the game's kind of easy, so I'll get to where it's actually hard, but especially if you play it in easy mode, it's like it's not tough to get through the actual challenge. So I guess the boss is supposed to be meaner depending on how bad you're doing, but I was always doing great. So anyways, you can also look at, I'm not exactly sure what the first app is. It's just something like, one of them is where you're watching a streamer, but the streamer is like, they don't actually get to the gameplay before you get to work. They're just sitting there like calling out people in chat and saying hi and then talking about donations and things like that. And then by the time they start, and then they're like, we're playing this indie game, blah, blah, blah. And then right before they turn it on, you have to disembark or just stops doing the feed. You can also watch the news, and the news is where you kind of find out what's going on in the outside world, which is it's political upheaval, but it's not actually tied to any real world events. In this game, it's all about garbage and, you know, about how there's all kinds of riots and stuff as to how, like, the waste management in that particular city, area, whatever, is handling things. It's all very intentionally written vaguely so that you can't quite tell what's going on, or it could be bad English. I don't actually know, but it's either way, it's kind of incomprehensible, but it describes like certain things that are happening that you're like, okay, I get what's going on here. This is, you know, things are politically bad. And, you know, that does sort of bleed into the game a little bit, but not too much. And then the third option is actually where you can purchase things, and we'll get to that in just a second. So you get to work, and basically your boss comes and yells at you, of course, and then you start your day. Your day is about 4 minutes long, and when, as the 4 minutes are counting down, people will come by, just various either disturbing or kind of normal looking 2D sprite guys. We'll put their items on the, on a conveyor belt. And then of course you have the scanner. You just push the A button to run stuff through the scanner. And then when you're done, it will show the total. They will put money on the counter, and then you will choose the, you'll choose money until you, until you've satisfied the price of whatever they're buying. And of course there's the endless question. Do you need a packet, which is actually a grocery bag? I don't know of any place where they call them packets, but anyways, apparently that's important enough that they made that the title of the game. And they'll say yes or no. 90% of them say no. But if they do say yes, then you have to push in the right stick to access a bag. And it's just, the bag floats away. It has nothing to do with anything else. You just have to remember to push that at some point during the transaction. And then, yeah, if they give you too much money, then you have to make change. The actual computer screen is very good about doing the math for you. It's like, okay, this cost 25, they gave you 40, you need to give them 15, so you give them a 5 and they give them a 10. And then they go away. And the point of it is to do as many of these as you can in the allotted time without messing up. And if you mess up, it costs you money, but the game's a little bit forgiving on that. But yeah, like, you earn money every time you do a successful transaction, which is not how working an hourly job like that works.
Working on commission at the grocery store.
Yeah, it's like, it's a little weird. And the items are bizarrely priced too. Like bananas are like $45, but like, you know, and an energy drink is like $15, but you know, something else might just be $5. I don't know. It's all over the place. And speaking of, so basically, you know, you do that. And when your time is up, no matter what you're doing, if you're in the middle of a transaction and you haven't finished it yet, then you just miss out on that particular commission. As soon as your day is over, it just takes you right back to the house where you're standing there in your underwear. You put on the clothes, you leave the house, you get on the bus, where again, you cannot skip the sequence. You have to actually sit there and wait the whole trip. And it's like a 4-minute thing by itself. It's like half the game is waiting on the bus and half the game is in the actual game. And, basically, you just keep doing this. And as the days go by, like increasingly weird things happen. So like that first button that I mentioned that had the streamer on it, well, sometimes it'll just have a dude's face that's just kind of wriggling in a weird way. And when you get to work, that is the background of your work now. So you just get to stare at this giant face that, you know, it's not doing anything to you. It's just like it's got 2 frames of animation, but you got to work around it. And so there's 2 different modes to the game. There's easy. Well, actually, it asks you if you want a packet. And if you say yes, then it's easy mode. And if you say no, then it's normal mode. In easy mode, this is all you do for the whole game. You just get in there, scan items, and eventually it gets to where like there's items that have to be weighed, which is actually true for, you know, regular grocery stores too. And I worked as a cashier, so I know this. So like bananas come by, then you actually, it pulls up a keypad and you have to put in the code for bananas. And it's one of those things where, and then there's a little like list of like all the codes that you know, can pull up at any time, but eventually you just memorize them. So every time a banana shows up, and there might be 4 bananas in a order, you're just like 6, 6, 5, 6, 5. And then, you know, you put that in potatoes, 1, 1, 0, 1. By the way, that might be a reference to Earthbound, but anyways. So yeah, eventually that happens. Eventually they also bring over baked goods, which have 3 number codes and things like that. And like I said, if you mess up, you lose money and the boss, I guess, gets mad at you. But if you just keep doing your work, eventually the easy mode just ends and takes you back to the title screen. I won't tell you what the ending is, but it's actually kind of funny. But yeah, as like I said, as you keep going, you keep, you know, the world sort of unravels a little bit. But then when you play normal mode, that's where things get interesting. So you know, put on your clothes and get on the bus. And then basically the last third of being on the bus, it actually switches to where you can control the bus with the left stick, or sorry, with the right stick, which is infuriating. I wish they would do the left stick. The left stick's not doing anything. That needs to be the control. And you dodge stuff that appears, that, you know, it's like fireballs coming out of nowhere. The devil comes down to pour Kool-Aid straight down that you have to dodge. And, I say Kool-Aid, it might be lava, but the devil's face kind of looks like the Kool-Aid man's face. I actually took a screenshot and I'll send that along at some point. But anyways, and there's just like all kinds of increasingly strange stuff that happens that you actually have to dodge or else you take damage. And that's where you can actually use the money that you've been earning in the job to actually purchase extra lives. You can purchase furniture for your house, which worked one time for me. And then every time I would push it, didn't seem to do any. It would take my money and then I would go home and not see any more furniture. So I don't know what's up with that. And that's actually a thing in this game, is that there's a lot that happens in this game that they do not tell you about, and you just have to figure it out. As you're going through days of work, when people say they don't want a packet, then you end up with this plastic bag in your inventory, and they get stored in your room, and like I don't know how to get rid of them. I don't know what they do. There's a little, there's a little graphical indication that if you have, I guess, less than 5, you get 2 green hearts. And if you have more than 30, you have -2 red hearts. I have no idea what any of that means. And the game never explains it. So I'm afraid I can't speak to that in this review, but things happen and they don't seem to be of too much consequence. But what's kind of interesting is that eventually, like all of the copy to this game says, you start hallucinating battles between Chimera, I guess is what they're saying, and archers. What happens is that you have to go about your day scanning people's like groceries and taking their payments. And sometimes, you know, their payments are wrong. Sometimes you have to ask for more money before you ring it up. And like, you know, there's all kinds of things that kind of slow you down. the whole time, on the bottom right corner of the screen, you've got these little archers who are auto-shooting little dragons as they fly by, and you have to, like, take care of those archers, too. So, oh my God. The whole thing becomes this juggling act of doing these absurd things in a, like, disturbing, like, looking thing. And, yeah, it's like you're basically trying to manage your distractions, in a sense, because with the archers fire automatically, but they have this little life bar that keeps going down, and if a dragon gets past them, then it does damage to you, just like getting hit by a fireball on the bus. Yeah. And, but, so you click in the left stick in order to toggle them between firing and losing their energy, and then storing their energy, but when they're storing their energy, they aren't firing, so you have to pay attention to them down there while you're scanning, while you're entering in the code for bananas, and, you know, like I said, with the background increasingly becoming, like, bizarre stuff that you've seen on the bus.
So, hey, basically, this is just another fever dream from Marginal Act.
Yeah, pretty much. But I'm going to say this is the most fun one yet. I actually really enjoyed this one. Like, I enjoy the of course, the absurdity of it is more amusing in this one, I think, than Vasilis. I think this one is actually more fun. Even the disturbing parts are more fun. Like, even if it's a dude whose face is made of lumps, which is actually what they chose for the icon to the game, as if it's important, but that's just literally one of the customers, and there's no reason for him to be there. It's just another customer you got to take care of. But yeah, no, I actually really quite enjoyed this one. I would say, just having seen what I've seen of this developer yet, this is maybe my favorite game of theirs. It's very simplistic. It definitely conveys the a sense of, like, just, oh God, here we go again, like, of day to day work, but condensed into, like, you know, 8 minute days. And, like, it does actually make you memorize the code for goddamn bananas. I still remember from working at Walmart.
Oh, geez. All right. Overall, $7. Your verdict.
All right, if you want to be, like, severely weirded out doing a completely mundane thing, but it's actually pretty fun, then yes, this is for you. That's going to be about 10% of people, I think. I can't recommend it to your general audience of people who just want, like, a fun game that's, you know, easy to understand. However, there's those weirdos out there among us who enjoy this sort of stuff, and if you do enjoy that sort of stuff, this is your game. It's cheap enough that it is a try it if you and you might catch it on sale or something like that. But it's, you know, if you watch, like, a gameplay video of it, you're not going to understand what's going on. It's actually quite, you know, it is more fun than it looks if you're watching it. I enjoyed it. I think that if you are maybe on the absurd side of, like, gaming, then you're going to like it too.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Congratulations, everyone.
Hooray!
Yay.
To do bedtime!
Are you going to sing again, Parnell?
Nope, bedtime!
Music this episode. Chris, your band just put out an EP, didn't they?
Oh my goodness, we did, yes.
Why don't you tell us about it as Eternal Rahaje drops 100 bits in chat.
More and
drop it, bitch!
Okay,
so, yeah, tell us about your EP.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to call it more of a demo, but... So my band is Gimmick Video Game Rock Band. We've been around for many years without having an album, but as soon as we're able to occupy the same room, we're going to be done with it. And to prove that, we've prematurely released... 3 tracks from the album. These are all going to actually be on the album. It is a pay what you want kind of thing. I even specified to Bandcamp that I don't even want your email address. You can just put 0 and download it.
Nice.
If you donate, that's great. All of the money goes towards the production of the actual album. But again, it is just a demo. It's 3 tracks from the album. We got Gimmick, Happy Birthday, which is, again, you know, from the Japanese only Sunsoft game, Mr. Gimmick. Well, it's called Gimmick in Japan and Mr. Gimmick in Europe, anyways. We got our Giant Ass Rygar medley, which has always been a stage favorite. It is many songs from Rygar, including a lot, a lot of one song that is actually only four notes long. But because that song occupies an entire dungeon in the game, we felt it necessary to actually draw it out to the same length as the other songs. So,
wow, you guys are assholes.
We are. And then one that everybody will know, the Top Man theme from Mega Man 3.
Yep, that's the one we got lined up to play on this one.
Sweet. I myself, even though we do have two guitarists, for this album, I'm actually taking over my old guitar duties, back when we had, Mike Lobos Villalobos on bass, which I've also taken over for. So I'm actually on this twice as the, one of the guitarists and also the bassist. So, but don't be confused. That's not how we do things in our live show anymore.
But you've been cloned.
Yeah, exactly. I'm more or less cloned for this, these recordings.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, we're going to listen to some Top Man. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds great.
Any final words?
Spin some more.
I found out that the original mascot for Cookie Crisp is actually a cereal wizard.
Wait, really? What? Well, so was he before Cookie Crook and
Cookie Wolf? Top? Yes. There was a, like, look it up at Cookie Crisp Wizard.
Yeah,
it's actually a thing.
Because the wolf is the present mascot.
Yes.
Okay. I'll be damned, there was a wizard.
Yeah. Cookie Jarvis is his name.
Hell of a name.
That's my final words. Cookie Jarvis.